Sounds good.
And Mike.
I hear you.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101.1
WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
You're listening to 101 WRIF Detroit, a greater media station broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. There's more Riff Rock coming right up, so don't go anywhere.
All day Thursday, your walk right in free station, 101 The Riff, unleashes a ticket blitz Thursday. Keep your radio locked on 101 WRIF all day this Thursday
for your chance to hook up with tickets to all of the hottest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Hooking you up like no other Detroit station can. Listen for your chance to win.
Then call the Riff Request line at 313-298-WRIF.
Don't forget.
You can always improve your chances to win by joining the Riff Cyber Crew today and score your totally unfair internet advantage.
Just log on to WRIF.com.
It's Ticket Blitz Thursday on the Riff. All day Thursday from your walk right in free station. 101 The Riff.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine Online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Mamma Mia's, located conveniently inside the Quality Suites in downtown Windsor. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine Online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Dr. Roche, put your best pace and body forward with help from Dr. Roche.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and roll.
At WRIF.com.
Broadcasting worldwide on the web, you're listening to 101 WRIF at WRIF.com. A service of Greater Media. Keep it here for more Riff Rock coming right up.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We called Jackson about his birthday party this weekend and wondered how people were going to afford this $5,000 price tag to get in.
Corey Haim is taking out a home equity loan. My brother Tito and I have worked out a payment plan. And Liza, a discount because she's bringing a moonwalk and some bald eagles for the children to play with.
Hey, whatever happened to that marriage, you think?
David Guest is stupid. He's a doo-doo-headed wiener. He teased Elizabeth's dog. He forgot Macaulay's birthday 2 years in a row. And he ruined everything for me and Liza.
What are you talking about?
Liza was going to be the mother of my next three blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white children.
I can't imagine what the hang-up is.
He's weird.
Oh, he's weird. Jackson, why are you charging people $5,000 to go to your birthday party?
Have you bought balloons lately? They're a ripoff.
All right, what else?
We'll have a plastic surgery station. You never know when someone will disfigure their nose playing pantsless Red Rover. Then there's the lawyers. I have to have one for every three children invited because children have a very active and litigious imagination.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
I hear you.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I can.
You're listening on WRIF.com. And if you'd like to email, I'm going back to the old one. Anyways, if you want to email, calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. If you know others, you can probably use them. But you got the best chance to have me see them during the show at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. All right. Nobody's rushing with, you're letting me set the tone. Those of you who say, oh, you're talking about the same old thing. This is the time you get in. 313-298-WRIF, and you can talk about, if you don't want to talk about Iraq or the economy, you can talk about the most embarrassing tattoo you ever had or something like that. But I'd like to talk about the continuing culture wars between this small band of sort of flint-hearted, conservative Americans who think they're the majority, and the rest of us. And we're heading up to the 40th anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. 1960s were a time when politics, to a large extent, had their course altered by assassination. And I'm curious how each one of you, see this. I mean, a lot of it happened a long time ago. We're going to be having a lot of 40th anniversaries. 1963 is a long time ago. So let me see. If say you were 13 then, 53. Well, I would think a large part of this audience, probably the assassination of John F. Kennedy is right up there with the assassination of McKinley and Lincoln. Who was the other guy? Garfield. So this is just like ancient history. But these assassinations, like long after the Lincoln assassination, the idea that John Wilkes Booth was not the sole assassin of Lincoln, so the idea that Lee Harvey Oswald was a lone assassin, that case closed, used the title of the book by Posner. What's his first name? Interviewed him, can't think of it. Anyways, that the case isn't closed, that many people see still a large-ranging conspiracy. In fact, in all of the major assassinations of the 1960s, Malcolm X coming after John F. Kennedy, John Kennedy's brother Robert, and also Martin Luther King, each of these assassinations fundamentally altering the landscape of politics in our country during that turbulent era. And each of them had assigned three of them, a single assassin. In the case of Malcolm X, the first black Muslim leader, and then a man who'd changed his views considerably, with two men who were convicted of his death. Also, Bush going to London, going to cost us tens of millions, us the taxpayers, and more about the sorry situation in Iraq. The total deaths now up to 417, but we'll talk about all of that. If you'd like to raise some subjects of your own, 313-298-WRIF. The strike at Borders in Ann Arbor continues. If we have people listening that are involved in that want to give us an update, please call us, 313-298-WRIF. Let me see here. Got a few emails at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. This one is from some psycho bigoted Nazi who sent me 10 lists of hate speech today. Actually, it's not true. That's not my words. This is from Brandy. She wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. She said, I look forward to you telling your audience that about some psycho bigoted Nazi tried to send you a 10-item list of hate speech today. Now, last week I said the only thing that conservatives see wrong with the world is that liberals exist. And Brandy wanted to tell me that that's not the case. She said, it's cute how you flatter yourself by believing that the 200 million conservatives in this country, myself included, actually give a group like the liberals that much thought. I'm going to attempt to educate you here. The list is way too long, but it's things like abortion, she wants to execute everybody, stuff like that. But it's pretty interesting. First one I agree with, that hardworking men and women are forced to hand over a large portion of the money they earn to the government. Really, it's important, and Brandy's adjective here, hardworking men and women, because the people that aren't working real hard, they make the most amount of money, and they also have the least taken out of their taxes, and they just got this huge tax cut. Now, see, this is why I don't understand the Brandys of the world. Because if she's in the middle class, the working class, maybe she's ultra rich. I don't know. There are some of us listening that are. But George W. Bush could have done a couple of things. Rather than presiding over an historical job loss rate of almost 3 million jobs now, rather than sinking this country back into debt after it had this big surplus during the 1990s, if George W. Bush, the guy, he was born on third base, he thinks he hit a triple, he doesn't have the brains to... I don't know. I don't want to say any job category, because a lot of those job categories are hard to do. In other words, George W. Bush is president because of his dad, because he's a rich guy, because his dad was a rich guy, because he was connected to rich and powerful people. We've gone through a lot of that before. But George W. Bush if he would have thought about this, and this would have been, you know, a real juncture, because there's no reason to think he thinks of anything, and that he would have said, look, the middle class and the working class and the and also the working poor, that contrary to popular belief, has money taken out of their paltry wages, like the people at Borders that top out at $9.50 an hour. I can't even do the math on that. If you make $10 an hour, you make the grand yearly total of $20,000 a year. So Borders workers make less than that, and their CEO makes $23 million. So this is greed of the, you know, the first magnitude. But Brandy's worried that, as I am, that hard working men and women are forced to hand over a large portion of the money they earned. She's gotten big capital letters to the government. Well, this is not some liberal doing this. Government spending and government, the government bureaucracy has expanded under Bush. Most of this, of course, is not in the social programs that, besides often being a boondoggle, help people. This is solely a pork barrel where Bush's friends, his contributors, the war industries, and who cleans up after the war, the Bechtels and the Halliburtons and what have you, they're getting our money. The Iraqis aren't. Well, some of them are. They were just, every once in a while, we send over like $50 million in cash to hand out to Iraqis, right? Then you say, oh, why are you taking that unemployment check here in Michigan or something like that? Anyway. Bush could have, had he thought about this, which would have, as I said, been this major juncture, he could have said, look, the people of the United States work hard, Brandy's right, and the middle class who needs a tax break, the working class that needs a tax break, the working poor who need a tax break, should get it. I mean, it shouldn't have been so extreme anyways that it sent us into debt. So, you know, we today and our kids and our grandkids are still going to be paying off interest, debt service to foreign bankers who are loaning us the money to pay Bush's pals to reconstruct Iraq that his other pals destroyed. I mean, this is a racket, folks. This is not a political or economic system anymore. Under Bush, this has become a pure, simple racket. Nothing else. All right. So then Brandy lists a lot of other things. I mean, she probably added, maybe I wrote her back and I said that, gee, I think you probably put an extra zero on the 200 million conservatives. And how do I know that? I don't know. I look at the list of New York Times bestsellers, and Michael Moore's book has been driven out of first place by Paul Burrell's book on, he was the butler for Princess Diana. But you go there, dude, Where's My Country? Michael Moore, the author of Stupid White Men, best-selling hardcover book of 2002. Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them, Al Franken, number three. Then you got Bill O'Reilly. And see, one of the things is, it's hard for me to believe that people don't realize what a far right-wing conservative he is. People actually think, oh, he criticizes people on both sides. He's just, it's the no-spin zone. Anyways, number five is Bushwhacked by Molly Ivins and Lou DeBose. And so three out of the top five books, bestsellers in our country, are virulent attacks on the virulent attack of the Bushco. Bushco. See, I mean, this whole country is the racket. That's the name for it. Bushco is done to this country. Now, and what I wrote to her was that the only reason that the conservatives don't play the vastly small role that they should be playing, given their numbers, is because they control the media so much. I mean, things are turning a little now. But the big media, of course, is owned either by corporate concerns that that reflect the concerns of Bushco or Bushco. I mean, you know, there's not, you know, he's part of that class. So, I mean, it's just kind of like a Mobius strip. Or you have far right wing media like Fox News and, you know, stuff like that. What they call liberal media is that a lot of the media, the big media, the corporate media, is liberal on social issues. You know, they think like maybe the government ought to get out of the private lives of people in terms of abortion and relationships and stuff like that. That they think that we ought to have a diverse country rather than have it being run by the same people that have run it since, you know, the origins of the country. Also, give you an idea. Here, this is from Stephen in Dearborn Heights. He wrote one of the old addresses. I'm asking you now to write to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. He says, I know you don't read the Detroit Free Press, but they had a half-page ad announcing the return of Rush Limbaugh. That's right. Pillhead is returning. Baby Blue Limbaugh is going to be back on Monday, and the WJR took out a half-page ad. Half the ad was just his face. I wonder if they showed him, like, you know, popping these baby blues, the OxyContin. When a local radio station, says Stephen, is willing to spend that kind of money to announce the return of a three-time rehab druggie, one has to believe it's all about money. Well, of course it is, Stephen. But and it's not even to disparage somebody that has been in rehab three times. I know people like that. And it's a sad, sad case. I mean, illegal drugs are a rather small problem in this country. What's really the problem are addiction to pharmaceuticals, if we're concerned about addiction. And people don't get addicted to marijuana. So we're talking about, with illegal drugs, heroin, crack, stuff like that. I mean, that's a relatively low rate. But what's really a major problem is addiction to the kind of addiction that Rush Limbaugh has. And the reason we call him Pillhead... Like, I've known people that have been in rehab that can't kick these habits. I wouldn't be that disparaging towards them. This is a sad situation. This is a medical problem. This is nothing that people should go to jail for. Unless you're the biggest hypocrite in the world, like Pillhead Limbaugh, and you've been advocating all along, throw everybody in jail that violates the drug laws. Now, this man was involved in the illegal acquisition of prescription drugs. So he should go to jail. And he was the guy that mocked Kurt Cobain. He's the guy that mocked Jerry Garcia from the Grateful Dead. He's the guy that mocked the governor of Massachusetts in the 1988 Democratic Party candidate for president, his wife, Kitty Dukakis, who also had the same problem. And yet, here this guy is, stoned out of his brains. Imagine all these conservatives, all these angry white guys, man, they turn in a few angry white gals as well. They turn into Rush Limbaugh, and he's going, and I think these people all belong in jail. And they go, yeah, yeah, lock them up, kill them all. Because, you know, they're heavy into punitive measures. That's their whole deal, you know, because they're, you know, as I said, they're flint-hearted, stone-hearted. Suddenly, one of theirs is as Stephen says, a three-time rehab druggie. A spokesperson, the main spokesperson, a guy that makes a third of $1 billion and is stoned out of his brain on baby blues, making all these pronouncements, and he's going to wind up to be still the big spokesman of the conservative movement. This 20 million that speaks way out of proportion for their actual numbers and has done so much damage to this country. Historically, they always have. I'll do this real quickly because I've said it before. But you remember, it was up to the conservatives in this country in 1776, we'd still be a colony of Britain. It was up to the conservatives of this country, we'd still have slavery. It was up to the conservatives in this country, we'd still have segregation. It was up to the conservatives in this country, we would not have women voting. If it was up to the conservatives in this country, we would have absolutely no trade unions. If it was up to the conservatives of this country, where there would be no civil rights laws. If it was up to the conservatives of this country, we'd probably still be fighting a war in Vietnam, just like they did endlessly in George Orwell's 1984. Hey, man, I'm off on a tear, aren't I? Okay, is that the peace sign? No. All right. You can tell we haven't moved yet because Rick Fox, our producer and phone screener, is still giving me hand signs which phone line to go to. Now, this just came in. It's from Bill. He's listening in Seattle, Washington on WRIF.com. And he says, now the pro-Bush droids have made it personal. My favorite band is banned for criticizing the unelected shaved chimp. That's Bush, by the way. If you go to my website, you can go to this site. Now, Jethro Tull, Ian Anderson, whose band is called Jethro Tull, he's been appearing around town at these classic stations. He was here with a DJ, my old pal, Ken Calvert, for WCSX. Can I say those things? Not to hell. Anyways, so these right-wing, I'm reading right off my website, peterwerbe.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E.com. Right-wing classic rock cretins in New Jersey censor Jethro Tull's Ian Anderson because he criticized Bush and Blair. So these people have no commitment to the fundamentals of the American Constitution that they say they love so much. Here's one of the things that Anderson said. You can go to this site. If you click on my site, again, it's Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E. And you know, Anderson, quite a guy. He says, I hate to see the American flag hanging out of every bloody station wagon, out of every SUV, every little Midwestern house in some residential area. It's easy to confuse patriotism with nationalism. So, well, that's his opinion. You may, you know, have a flag on your car and you think it's fine. But here are these people going to say, we are going to not allow you to hear Aqualung, you know, and you know, songs like that. And I, so one of the things, this this New Jersey station, the Hawk, isn't that cool? I wonder how many guys in suits sat around a table. What are we going to call this, man? You know, how about the Fox? No, there's too many foxes. How about the Hawk? Oh, cool. That's really cool. Man, radio sucks sometimes so bad. I'm so glad there's WRIF and some of the other stations. Oh, no, I'm sorry. If you're listening, Doug Podell, our program director, I'm glad there's WRIF. I am not glad there are any other stations around whatsoever. No, Doug doesn't buy that for a second. Anyways, I got here. Only one thing to do. Go buy tons of Jethro Tull CDs to say, screw you to the censors. And now here, these morons on The Hawk, they when they change formats to classic rock, the first song they played was Born in the USA by Bruce Springsteen. Now, they're as dumb as Ronald Reagan, because Ronald Reagan loved that song because he thought it was a pro-American patriotic song. Do they listen to the lyrics of these songs ever? No, absolutely not. And, you know, and so I wrote, are they going to stop playing Bruce Springsteen and half the other rockers who think Bush is a liar and a warmonger? And you go to a John Mellencamp thing. I got a headline, too, here. Rush Limbaugh meets with space aliens. So you might want to check that out. Anyways, for some reason or other, I was going to take it easy, wound up going the opposite way. Let's take our first caller. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. This is Linda from Harper Woods.
Hi, Linda.
I've got a comment and then two questions. You always talk about media and how you can't trust it or whatever. I think a good show that gives a somewhat in-depth information is Nightline with Ted Koppel, because this past week they interviewed wounded National Guardsmen from Iraq.
That's good. That's a story that's starting to come out.
And then the two questions I had was if Bush is running in, 2004?
Right, next year.
Okay. If he's running unopposed in his own party, what does he need to go campaign fundraising for zillions of dollars if there's no other Republican candidate?
I actually don't know. He's already raised over $100 million. He's really the fundraiser in chief. It's a disgrace. He lectured the Middle East about emulating American democracy. Well, to some extent they do. I mean, people buy government. So Greg Palast, who's a good source, gregpalast.com, P-A-L-A-S-T.com. Greg says that we don't have elections anymore. We have auctions. And it's very possible. I mean, they're worried about losing this. They know that they have this incredible house of cards. They've ruined the economy. All these people have died in Iraq. All these Americans and Iraqis have these hideous wounds. Their country's destroyed. So they might need like $180 million. They might need like $180 million to saturate this country with advertisement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The third one is, do you think Colin Powell is better at diplomacy than George W. Bush? And do you think if he were president that we would have gone to war?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's never been any sense that George W. Bush had any capacity for diplomacy. I don't know. You know, there are a lot of forces driving Bush into this war, very little of which had to do with freeing Iraq, and certainly none with the non-existent weapons of mass destruction, which Colin Powell knew. I mean, Colin Powell is capable of lying, as is Bush. And it's sort of like we see Bush as, the bad cop, and Colin Powell is the good cop. I mean, he gave one of the most forceful and mendacious, and that is, in other words, lie-filled presentations before the United Nations world body, knowing full well that not a thing he was saying was true. So, I mean, I have nothing but contempt for the man.
Okay.
Yeah, let me just tell you this, though. This from United Press International. The number of U.S. casualties from Operation Iraqi Freedom, troops killed, wounded, or evacuated due to injury or illness, has passed 9,000. This is an amazing number.
Yeah.
In addition, you see how quickly this goes. The 397 service members who have died, which now it's up to 417, and the almost 2,000 wounded, almost 7,000 troops were medically evacuated for non-combat conditions between March 19th and October 30th. Front page of the New York Times today, they showed the reality and the results of Bush's unnecessary and illegal war. Men without legs, men without, without arms. And you don't hear about this stuff. Like, I was going through Yahoo News, and just way in the back of some story, which people often don't even get to, and frequently I don't, there it said five American soldiers today were wounded by a roadside bomb. I mean, can you imagine, Linda, you and I and three others, three people you know and that you really care about, you've really bonded with, we're driving in a Humvee, and all of a sudden a bomb goes out underneath us. These shards of metal going through our body, lopping off our arms, destroying our face, taking out our guts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And,
on the back page.
Yeah. And that barely makes it. That barely makes it.
Well, one thing Nightline did was they interviewed doctors at a MASH-type hospital.
Right.
And they, they focused more on the wounded there. I mean, I think they're... I like that show.
Well, I'll tell you. If you got a computer?
Yes, I do.
Okay, try FAIR, F-A-I-R, FAIR.org. And they do these analyses of different shows, and one of them they do is Nightline. And from time to time, Nightline has good stuff on, and I've often been surprised, like what you're just mentioning. But overwhelmingly, they have white, older men, government officials, and conservatives.
Okay,
so, I mean, get the information where you can, but they, like most of corporate media, have a very strong bias, particularly in terms of who they present for us.
Yeah.
Thank you, Linda.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. It's Peter Werby.
Hey, Peter. This is Ryan from Redford. I love the show, man. You get my blood stirring up every Sunday.
I got mine stirred up there.
Hey, I loved how you went on a tear early on with the conservatives. These hardworking conservatives, they definitely need a wake-up call. Because the way I see it, this whole tax thing, it's just complete irony to me. How the conservatives, I understand the rich conservatives who own these corporations and everything, they're getting the big tax cuts. They're the ones, you know, that these politicians are feeding their greed.
Mm-hmm.
So at least I understand where they're coming from. But these conservatives that are hardworking conservatives, they don't understand that they're just like the toys for the corporate owners to play with. I mean, they're the ones that the corporations can get away with all their stuff because they're the ones that are employing these people, all these thousands of people that work for this one CEO.
Yeah, they're sort of the cannon fodder for the conservative movement because ultimately the economic... here's the way they work it. The economic programs of the conservatives benefit maybe the top, at best, top percent of the 10% of this country, maybe only the top 5%. But what they do is they bring forth these what they call social issues, abortion, execution, gun control, stuff like that, and they jerk people around with those, so they get them to support them. Also, you know, they're people that really don't have democratic personality, small d. They love people in power. They're really enamored of the powerful and the wealthy. So even though they're getting screwed, they're getting ripped off, they're getting looted by the people that they love and admire and cherish, even when these guys turn out to be pill heads and governor gangbangs and a million other, you know, hypocritical things that these Republicans and conservatives get caught doing all the time, they still love them.
Yeah, I don't understand it.
I don't understand. Well, you got to really go to this, the books on psychology, I think. All right, thank you so much.
Right. Thanks,
I appreciate it. I'll just take one more call before our break. Hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. My name's Julie. I'm calling from Ann Arbor.
Hi, Julie.
Hi. I'm a member of Borders Readers United, and it's a group of supporters of Borders striking employees at number one store in Ann Arbor. I'm calling to give you an update on what's going on with the strike.
Well, they've been on strike, what, since a week ago Saturday?
That's right.
There was a big splash, and I haven't heard much about it since.
Well, it's a small group, and we're looking for more community support, and we're looking to make it a national boycott as well. So we're trying to now get the word out, and you're going to be hearing a lot more activity happening in the coming weeks starting tomorrow.
Well, I think it's really important because after losing that newspaper strike a few years ago, that really set back the cause of working people in this area. And, I mean, I don't know if you heard the beginning of the show, but I was just saying, I mean, how terrible this is that this extraordinarily wealthy corporation isn't willing to pay a decent wage to these people. My understanding is that a lot of these people have been there it's almost like their career.
Yeah, not only that, but Borders, profits is increasing every year. They made $106 million last year without any money toward improving customer service or any money toward putting it to the employees or giving them higher wages. I mean, they've been starting people at $6.50 an hour.
Wow. Well, they say that that's competitive in the industry. That's their argument.
Yeah, well, if you shop at Borders, you're supporting corporate greed.
Yeah.
And, so we're calling for a boycott of Borders and Walden Books throughout the country.
What's a Walden Books? Is that connected with Borders?
Yeah, it's the same company.
Oh. Well, actually, if you go to my website, I should do that. I would find out some of this information that I have a link to all that, because the Borders Readers United is kind of a long URL, isn't it?
It is kind of a long URL, but I can... Let me see if I can find it here. I wrote down a piece of paper. It's www.bordersunited.2ya.com.
Okay, I've got Borders Readers United 2ya.com.
That might be it, too. Sorry.
Well, what's the mood of the strikers? I mean, do they think it's something they can win? I mean, here is just this one store of this enormous chain. What do they have, 430 stores or something?
Yeah.
Yeah,
we're 400 stores throughout the country. But they're pretty spirited and they're pretty dedicated to fighting this thing, and they're hoping that it's just this rolling kind of movement that hits all the Borders stores eventually.
Well, let me ask you a question. I mean, you said you were a supporter. I mean, why? I mean, what's in it for you?
Well, I just think it's an important struggle for these workers. I mean, they work really hard and they hardly make any money. And Borders was a good, community company that started from the ground up. And these workers kind of made Borders what it is today. And Borders Corporation has given almost nothing back to these workers. And they deserve a break.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really kind of the climate of our country today. I mean, these CEOs are making, $1 million plus in salary and bonuses and refuse to give one penny toward the workers that are kind of supporting them.
Well, it reminds me, in fact, I think it's the same union, the United Food and Commercial Workers, the UFCW, that is waging these strikes against the supermarkets in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always the same argument. The supermarkets say, well, if we keep paying people decent wages, and they're barely decent wages even at union, even with the union in these supermarkets, they say, well, we're not going to be competitive with Walmart. So this is this phrase that you see in the global justice movement. It's a race to the bottom, that we're all told that we have to continually take less money for the hard work we do because we won't be competitive. Well, it seems like if these CEOs, like the one at Borders, making $23 million, there's a lot of leeway there.
Yeah, I mean, most of those jobs that come from Borders or get from Walmarts, they're getting paid really low wages, but all their merchandise is coming from China. So, and that's going to be really cheap costs for labor in China, too.
Man.
One more thing I wanted to say before you hang up, you advise people to go out and buy, a Jethro Tull CD.
Yeah?
Please don't buy them at Borders.
Gotcha. Julie, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. Thanks for joining us. All right, we'll take a break. Right back to get your calls.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werbe on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
We don't just want you to think. We want you to act.
We don't just want you to imagine. We want you to discover.
We don't just want you to lead. We want you to inspire.
Hopefully, these are things you want for yourself, things you expect for yourself.
We don't just want you to succeed. We want you to flourish.
These are just some of the great things we want for you at University of Detroit Mercy. For generations, UDM has attracted people like you, looking for a rewarding future in architecture, engineering, communications, chemistry, psychology, pre-law, or one of UDM's 100 other respected programs or degrees. Our goals are as high as yours. Call 1-800-635-5020 or visit www.udmercy.edu. University of Detroit Mercy.
We want great things for you.
Join us for our undergraduate and graduate open house on Wednesday, November 19th from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the McNichols campus. Call Nancy at 1-800-635-5020 for more information.
Are you suffering from reoccurring minor aches and pains? Do you have arthritis or an old injury that flares up from time to time? Now there's an inexpensive natural solution available to curb these aches and pains. The Grabber Mycol Adhesive Body Warmer. Portable, convenient, air-activated. These little heating pads provide over 12 hours of soothing relief from sore muscles, aching backs, and arthritis pain. 12 hours. Find the Grabber Mycol Adhesive Body Warmer in the pain relief aisle at your local Meijer stores or visit warmers.com to find other local retailers. Looking for pain relief? With Adhesive Body Warmer, you're getting warmer.
Hunting, fishing, camping, skiing, snowmobiling, you look forward to your favorite winter activities, but sometimes the cold drives you back inside. It's time to get warmer with Grabber Mycol Warmers. Grabber's line of air-activated hand, toe, body, and foot warmers keep you warm and toasty for hours. They conveniently fit in pockets, bags, or glove compartments so you'll always be ready to battle the cold. Grabber Mycol Warmers. Get warmer. Available at Cabela's, Sport Mart, Dunham's, Dick's Sporting Goods, Sports Authority, MC Sports, REI, Target, and Meijer, or visit warmers.com to find other local retailers.
When the moment has to be truly special, just remember these love matters.
J.B. Robinson.
You know what happens when you give her an amazing holiday gift from J.B. Robinson Jewelers? You instantly become the guy other women use as an example. As in, did you see what Bob gave Beth? Why can't you be more like that? Which is good. For over 70 years, the experts at JBR have been, well, experts at helping guys like you find the perfect gift. They ask the right questions and have all the right answers. Like an extensive selection of beautiful 3-stone diamond rings in round or princess cut. Collections starting from $299.99 to $7,000. Plus, while love comes with no guarantee, JBR has a 90-day money-back guarantee. Just remember these love letters.
Shop J.B. Robinson Jewelers, 9 convenient locations. Free financing for 1 year available. Minimum purchase and minimum monthly payments required.
Your Metro Detroit Ford dealers have just announced a great SUV early bird lease termination program to help you buy or lease any new Ford vehicle. If you currently lease a qualified Ford Sport utility vehicle and your lease expires between February 1st and June 30th, 2004, you can turn in your lease up to 7 months early with no penalties. Just in time to get your new Ford for the holidays. This program is for everyone, employees and retail customers. Your Metro Detroit Ford dealers have some of the best buyer lease programs of the year. Plus, now add the Early Bird Lease Termination Program. Not all current SUV lessees will qualify for the Early Bird Program. Customers must renew into a new 2003-2004 Ford Division vehicle on a Ford Credit RCL or standard retail contract by 1-1304. Lessees do not have to renew to the same vehicle. Residency restrictions apply. Take new retail delivery from dealer stock by 1-1304. Think Ford first and see your Metro Detroit Ford dealer today.
Ask yourself this question. Are you happy with the size of your breasts? Now ask yourself, do big breasts really make a difference? If you answered no to the first question and yes to the second, then listen up because there is good news. With the help of Dr. Roche, you can have the appearance that you've always dreamed of. With over 20 years board-certified experience in cosmetic procedures, Dr. Roche has seen hundreds of patients choose a breast enhancement procedure to meet a variety of needs. With numerous options, such as breast augmentation, lift, and reduction, Dr. Roche will discuss the procedure that's right for you. Life is short. Why go through another day unhappy with your appearance? A breast enhancement procedure will give you a whole new positive attitude and outlook on life. Visit DrRoche.com today. That's DrRoche.com or AOL keyword Dr. Roche and privately view before and after pictures. Then call Dr. Roche in Bloomfield Hills at 877-338-1110 to schedule a consultation.
Put your best face and body forward. Dr. Gregory Roche.
This is another Riff Rock concert.
42,000 people witnessed rock and roll history this summer. Now, Detroit has demanded an encore performance. This is the concert of your life. Aerosmith. Two rock and roll giants. Full stage production. Full sets. And of course, full makeup. Aerosmith. Sunday, November 30th, the Palace of Auburn Hills. Tickets are on sale now at cc.com, palacenet.com, the Palace Box Office, all Ticketmaster locations are charged by phone. 248-645-6666. Aerosmith.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
All right, thank you very much. Continuing talking about the culture wars between the small group of conservatives and the rest of us, seems like they're a lot larger than they actually are because they control the media. So they've got the big voice all the time, and there is a vast right-wing conspiracy, to use a phrase popular in the 1990s, to make sure that most people with views to the left of Mussolini are kept off of the air. Now, Ben Birch wrote in, and he is the webmaster of WhiteRoseSociety.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Now, WhiteRoseSociety.org, they're the people that archive this show, and you can go to them and always hear a show after. He says, since Amazon.com runs the Borders.com website, I've taken down all of my links to Amazon.com at WhiteRose.org and replaced them with links to Powell's books. Well, great. That's the kind of support that's needed by these strikers there. Let's see, though. There was one I was looking for. Yeah, Digger writes in that WRIF still not streaming for Macs, just for PCs, and your website is inaccessible to people with Macs. I know. And this is going to take a while to deal with, so we, in fact, will get to that as well. All right. Yeah, and I want to bring up another subject, but if a number of people want to comment about Borders, so if you're on the line, hold on for that. If you want to make other comments, 313-298-WRIF. And I don't see these strikes ever as just small little incidents, or not incidents, you know, matters that don't concern me. I mean, overall, all of us have a vested interest in working and middle-class people getting higher and higher wages. Because that means that, you know, floats all boats. And if wages are getting driven down the way they are, and this is another vast right-wing conspiracy, a corporate conspiracy, it's a race to the bottom, folks, and we're all going to be suffering. Well, we're not. They'll probably maintain about a third of the country. It'll be like Guatemala. So a third of the country will live in, you know, relative luxury. And the other two-thirds, yeah, depends on what kind of gamble you're willing to take. The other two-thirds are going to be, you know, working at Walmart or working at Borders for $6.50 an hour, unless there's a resurgence of a people's movement for social and economic justice, because this is a vastly unjust country when it comes to economics and the distribution of wealth in this society. Now, George W. Bush is going off to London on Tuesday. A state visit, they call it. He's deeply unpopular, as this article says. He's hated. He's reviled because they have an oppositional press there. So if you read The Independent or The Guardian or The Mirror, you see another side other than just the pretty much faithful repeating of government lies the way it occurs in this country. Now, the headline says, Bush to keep distance from protests on London trip. What's new about that? There's something that's been developed where the president is not allowed to be within sight of demonstrators in this country. Wherever Bush goes, people demonstrate against him, but they're put into what's called free speech zones. Now, many of us were stupid enough to think that the whole country was a free speech zone. But under the Bush dictatorship, and that's what it's growing into, the police are told by the Secret Service, keep them four blocks away. These are, you know, like Christian pacifist groups. I'm not talking about anybody's dangerous or anything like that. Now, Bush says, I'm really looking forward to the trip to London. It's going to be a fantastic experience. Well, here's Bush's traveling entourage. And when, if we go back really to the beginning of the show and remember Brandy's remark about she was concerned that hardworking Americans, she's a conservative, hardworking Americans are having their earnings taken from them by the government. Now, what possible purpose could George W. Bush have in going to England? They have teleconferencing, they have the internet, they have that old-fashioned thing called telephones. Why does he have to go hobnob with the Queen of England? I mean, that's what he's looking forward to. He's going to have this triumphant visit. He was going to. Now they can't. He can't even go out of like Buckingham Palace. And American Secret Service, they wanted the Queen to completely redo Buckingham Palace and put in all these bomb-proof walls and windows and what have you. They're terrified that someone's going to make an airstrike on the palace while Bush is in there. So why the hell is he going? I mean, he's going to show the flag. To show the American flag? Well, you know who is leading the march? The hundreds of thousands of people that are going to be on the streets of London saying, George Bush, go to hell. Americans. There's going to be at least 100 Americans marching beneath a banner that says, proud of my country, shamed of my president. And they expect at least 100,000 people. Trade union members, environmentalists, peace activists are going to join forces. Michael Moore, the American filmmaker and comedian who's known for his outspoken views on the U.S. leader, is donating $1,000 to transport demonstrators from Manchester, which is up in the north. They've closed off the whole of the city. They've this is, you know, in anticipation of Bush's visit. I mean, what possible could be gained by, you know, by Blair? I mean, he's uniformly seen as they call him in the paper there, Bush's poodle. I mean, he's going to look even worse. Is this what Bush is trying to do? Well, here's pardon me, who is traveling with Bush? I can't do the math on this because the figures aren't here. He's going to have 250 Secret Service agents. I mean, imagine what that is going to cost. This is a little army. He's going to have 150 national security advisors. So that's what, 300, 400. He's going to have 200 representatives from other departments. So that's 600 people that you and I are paying to transport to London. This is in a time where, like universities, for instance, are getting priced out of the average person's budget. There's also going to be 50 White House political aides. Got to have those. Personal chef and a team of four cooks. Yeah. 15 sniffer dog teams and on and on and on. Two identical Boeing 747-200s and a third chartered jumbo jet. A Sikorsky Sea King helicopter. A Black Hawk helicopter. Two identical motorcades of 20 armored vehicles, including a limousine. You know, they do that thing where they, where's the president? You've seen that in movies. I mean, can anybody guess how much this is all costing us? Can anybody look around our community and see where we are having major problems with the budgets of every state? Governor Granholm is going around saying, what should we cut? Well, how about if we cut Bush's trip to Washington, to London? How about if we cut Bush's trip to London? One in three Britons think Bush is stupid, according to a poll. They have sympathy with the anti-war campaigners. The mayor of London, Ken Livingstone, is going to host a peace party at City Hall on Wednesday, which will be attended by the groups opposed to the war. And the mayor of the city that Bush is going to is holding a little soiree for his opponents. Bush, stay home, please. We want our money back. Hi, WRIF, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hello.
Hi.
Yeah, my name is David Lamb. I live in Novi, and I went to Borders the other day, and
yeah.
I was talking to the lady behind the desk about that. I heard you guys talking about him on the radio the other week, and she had to whisper. She couldn't speak up about it at all. She said, you know, the wages aren't good. She goes, and the worst thing about it is they don't treat you very well here.
Hmm.
I go, you're kidding me. And I said, you know, I work for Chrysler's. I said, I've been there 4 years, and I said, and the union is actually the best thing that's happened to me, even though I feel like you talk about, it's getting weaker and weaker by the year to the point where eventually there won't be anything like this, and all of us will be making low wages and high taxes, and just like you say. So I decided calling and to state my view.
Well, I'm glad you did, David. But, you know, so it's very important now that you know this that you, you know, boycott this store, because every time a union loses, like the loss of the newspaper strike, the employers get emboldened and know that all they have to do is start is keep grinding people down. That's what's happening at the nurses' strike up in Petoskey. That's what happened to the newspaper strike here, is they wear the ordinary person down. They wind up destroying, you know, the ordinary union members, wages. People leave the area. People then sometimes start crossing the picket line because they need health insurance or their houses are going to be taken away. In the meantime, let me tell you, Borders is spending millions of dollars combating the unions in this store and other stores across the country. So rather than taking this million, I don't know exact figure, but I'd say millions, and distributing that to these hardworking, loyal employees, they're going to do whatever they can to make sure that people get bum wages.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the way it is, and it's just a trend that seems to be going that way. Like, I work over at Chrysler, and I'm surprised how many free press newspapers you see all over the place, and it kind of makes me wonder, well, isn't this what it's all about? And I think the old-timers were a little more conservative and think like, they're real rah-rah union and all this stuff, and I'm a new guy there. And I'm thinking, well, I don't know what it's all about, but when you look at your paycheck and they share some of the profits that the companies are making, it's good for the people.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like, I don't know why Bush would want to be so against that, because they can just tax us even more.
Well,
he can get more from each individual than he's going to get from the rich people. So maybe they're a little mixed up on how they're doing things, but I agree with what you say.
Thank you, David.
I appreciate your program.
I appreciate you calling. Thanks for joining us at 313-298-WRIF. I'm Peter Werby, and hi, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hello, I'm Nick from Atlanta.
Hi, Nick.
Hey, I was passing by the Ann Arbor Borders the other day. It was, I think it was a Saturday, and it was like about 34 degrees. And I heard about the strike, so I was expecting like a lot of people. But there was only about 30 people there,
mm-hmm.
and it seemed like there's a lot of people still in the store. So I can see that strike still needs to
What? I'm sorry, I didn't hear. Still needs what? I didn't hear what you said.
Strike needs to actually get somewhat bigger.
Oh yeah.
So I was thinking, I'm not shopping at Borders, but I was thinking that that Borders is only like the tip of the iceberg with the corporate greed that's going on. I mean, I can shop about any place. And I'm supporting the greedy few who screw over their employees. I work at a Hollywood Video, and I only get $6.50.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows how much the big CEOs get from that place. I mean, if we really need to strike, we need to do some, like, national, big national strike, because it's almost every single corporation that actually rips off its employees nowadays.
Sure. No, it's not like if you boycott Borders and you say, oh, I'm going to go to Barnes & Noble. I mean, you have the same situation. But the strike at Borders is there. And as we heard from our caller, Julie from Ann Arbor, said that they were beginning this process of starting a strike support organization. Now, that was pretty active during the Detroit newspaper strike, and I was part of that. And, it was, there's a lot of reasons. I'm probably too complicated here to talk about why it lost. But, as I said earlier, every loss, when people are trying to better their working conditions and get better wages, every loss, is just kind of another nail in the, the coffin of this American standard of living. So, yeah, it's really important. And what I'd like, hopefully, that what I'd like to be able to announce next week is that that there's a way that people like myself and others that care about this issue can relate to it directly. I mean, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. It's just that what needs to happen is, hopefully this border strike does get big and other border strikes with this Ann Arbor store. I think this should be more of a national thing. I think more other stores, other bookstores and whatnot, retail stores, who rip off their employees while the CEOs get a huge amount of money.
Mm-hmm. Well,
like Kmart, for instance,
Walmart.
Walmart. Like, all these stores should strike with that. I mean, I think this should we should do something national, not just one store at a time.
Well, I agree with you. And that, I'll tell you, Dave, Nick, rather, that's been the dream of the militant sector of the labor movement for the last 120 years, and that is a general strike is what it's called. And kind of doing this real piecemeal, it doesn't give the power to ordinary working people that they could have if this was part of a national movement. And the fact that we don't have a national movement, like, say, was around the 1930s, the corporations have the wealth that they can just, you know, pick off one little sector at a time, or if they've got one little strike here in one little town in Michigan, whether it's nurses in Petoskey or bookstore workers in Ann Arbor, they can bring the full weight of their wealth down on these people. And you think about it, so they've got 429 other stores that are just zipping along, you know, being like a nice place to go have a latte and look at a book. So I agree with you 100%. Thank you, Nick.
Yep.
All right. Thanks for joining us at 313-298-WRIF. Oh, yeah. I should tell you just a minute or so before our break. I'm off to Miami. Someone said, what do they call me? A protest tourist. Well, there's some truth in that. I was there was a big anti-war, anti-Bush march in Washington on October 26. My wife and I were at that. And so I'm heading off to Miami tomorrow because there are these big protests against the Free Trade Area of the Americas ministerial meeting where these suits are sitting down to figure out how they can rip off the workers of the hemisphere. This is going to be like NAFTA on steroids. Continue the assault on the environment, erode worker rights and standards of living, the rights of women. I mean, it's just a horror show. And, Miami cops, from everything I've seen, are like they're preparing for an invasion. I guess some of these farmers groups, these Mexican farmer groups and these Korean farmer groups, because this is international. I mean, what was in Cancun a little while ago was the World Trade Organization, wasn't it? Yeah. And this is just in this hemisphere, the Free Trade Area of the Americas. That sounds real good. Free trade. Man, who's against free trade? Well, that's not it. I mean, what people say, a little code word is at least fair trade, not free trade. Free trade only works for the elites.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Peter will be back to take more calls right after this.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like the Shark Club on Ford Road in Canton. You can purchase full price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's 5 best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708. Prolong the pleasure, maximize the control, and see how much longer you last with Maxtral. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708.
Do you feel like half the man you used to be? Do you feel tired and irritable? Are you losing your sex drive? If so, you could have low testosterone.
I'm Dr. Richard Cohen, MD, men's health specialist. Testosterone levels can fall rapidly after age 35, but now you can boost your testosterone naturally. Introducing Testostazine, the powerful new testosterone-boosting system I developed for men who are starting to feel their age. Testostazine supports your body's ability to produce testosterone the way you did when you were younger, so you can restore your energy, youthful sex drive, and staying power. Testosterone keeps a man energetic and sexually confident. You can feel that way no matter what your age. Testostazine can help.
Call now for your risk-free confidential trial of testosterone. Call 1-800-807-8108. 1-800-807-8108. Guaranteed to work for you or your money back. Call 1-800-807-8108. Results will vary.
No matter what's going on in your life, the Windfall 10-draw deal from the Michigan Lottery can make it easier. It works for Joe Fletcher. His mother-in-law is visiting for a month.
If my Janie had married the boy I picked, she'd be a doctor's wife by now. No offense, dear.
None taken, Mother Wilson.
Joe's happy because he's entered in the next 10 Windfall drawings, no matter what takes up his time.
Could you hold my yarn while I knit?
Why not? It was so much fun last night.
And Joe received two free easy picks for playing Windfall during the 10-draw deal, so nothing can ruin his mood.
You know, you should lose some weight.
A great idea, Mother Wilson!
It's the Windfall 10-draw deal. Just go to your Michigan Lottery retailer, pick your Windfall numbers, and extend your wager for the next 10 drawings. That's 5 weeks, and you'll get two free easy picks for the next drawing.
Oh, who wants to watch a silly hockey game?
Not me, not while there's a silk flower special on the Decorating Channel.
Feel good with the Windfall 10-draw deal, now through November 30th.
You're listening to Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show with Peter Werby. Our phone number is 313-298-WRIF. If you're on hold trying to get on the show, please stand by. If the lines are busy, please try again.
All right, thank you very much. WRIF in Detroit is our official name, our Federal Communications Commission designation. And welcome if you're listening anywhere other than the Detroit area. Of course, our show is international. We're just a few miles from Windsor, Canada. But there's people listening all around the world at WRIF.com. And let's see. Wait a minute here. I'm sending something here to somebody. I want to get this to you real quickly. I think, yeah, a listen live link. Again, I think this is... okay. If you go to WhiteRoseSociety.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, there's a Macintosh Listen Live link for my stream on the website. Ben, you're the greatest. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Okay, I will. I'll put that on my website too. PeterWerby.com, W-E-R-B-E.com. Got a new commandment there, by the way. Question authority. That was the 11th commandment that got left out. So you might want to check that, and its link there's now that may be, oh yeah, this is coming up too, because this is the last show before the 40th anniversary of the assassination of John F. Kennedy, and no one's really told me what their how should I say it, what their take on it is. I would bet that, you know, 80-85% of the audience probably either wasn't alive or was pretty small and that didn't have a great impact. You know, your parents or your grandparents' generation, that was the thing, like they knew exactly where they were when they heard the news of John F. Kennedy being assassinated. But I said earlier, probably now to good numbers of you, particularly say if you were born in, let me see, what is it, you know, like in 1986 or 1987, it's like the assassination of Lincoln or McKinley or Garfield. But the weird, far-out, far-right-wing creatures that inhabit the Bush administration is, give you an idea here. You know, he's got this, Bush has got this new press secretary, Scott McClellan. His dad wrote this book called Blood, Money, and Power, How LBJ Killed John F. Kennedy. So, you know, maybe you can say, well, you know, come on, it's his dad, you can't blame everything. You know, and someone's parents. But, you know, everywhere you look in the Bush administration, you don't find moderate Republicans. You don't find old-fashioned conservatives. You find these far right-wing, whacked-out characters. All right, let's go back to our phones. Line 5 it is. Thank you, Rick Fox. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening. Hello, are you with me? Are you with me? No, you're not with me. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Oh, hi, Peter.
Hi.
Aren't you all excited about tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Anal cyst returns at noon.
Oh, that's right.
I'm going to go out and celebrate. I mean, all these restaurants are having big celebrations, you know.
What are you talking about? Come on.
Anyways.
What do you mean, restaurant? No,
I'm talking on the serious side here.
Well, let me just clue people in. Our caller referred to Pillhead Limbaugh, who's returning tomorrow after 5 weeks in rehab. This is his third time. We'll see how he does. I mean, he could be stoned out. You know, he was on the air, totally stoned out on OxyContin, putting forth all these lies and disinformation and misinformation. You could probably now forgive him because he was stoned. He didn't know what he was saying. But our caller referred to him as anal cyst. Now, you got to remember that all these Republicans are what we call chicken hawks. They're really pro-war. They really want all these wars all over the world, except when they had their own opportunity during the Vietnam War era, they scammed out of them. They either had a rich daddy that got them into the National Guard, like Bush, or in the case of Rush Limbaugh, it was anal cysts, proving that Rush Limbaugh is not a perfect a-hole. Anyways, go ahead.
Anyways, I want to talk to you on the more serious side here. Back in 1953, I understood that Eisenhower had given Charles de Gaulle $14 million to fight the whatever the forces were in at that time French Indochina, which later on became Vietnam.
Right.
Okay. Now, later on, of course, Eisenhower wanted to keep that hush hush. He didn't want the American people to know about what was going on over there.
No, I mean, they were giving direct aid to the French to continue their colonial domination of Indochina. I mean, that wasn't a deep, dark secret.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, who were they fighting? They were fighting communist forces over there.
Yeah, the Viet Minh, as it was called then.
That they called, but they were also probably, if I'm not mistaken, were backed up by the Red Chinese.
Well, you know, actually, I mean, it's a long, complicated story. The Chinese, seeing how close Vietnam was to their border, you would have thought that they would have given, like, incredible amounts of aid to, the Viet Cong during the 1960s and 70s, but they never did. They never did come up with very much. These guys got pretty deep games, and on one hand, they were anxious for the United States to get pasted. On the other hand, they didn't want to alienate what has turned out to be a major trading partner for the United States. Remember, here was this war criminal, Richard Nixon, who did what? And what was it? 1970? Went to China,
mm-hmm.
Right? So, there's a lot of deep games going on.
Now you got Kissinger,
war criminal,
wanted in 39 countries around the world.
I think you're exaggerating. I think he's only wanted in 32 countries.
Oh, is it 32?
Yeah. Let's not exaggerate. A man is, indictable in 32 countries for crimes.
If he goes, more than halfway around the world, he'll be indicted and thrown in prison, maybe even sentenced to death.
Well, a lot of those countries, there's warrants out for him for testifying in civil suits, things like because of what he was part of in Chile and places like that. But, definitely belongs in The Hague. Thank you. Appreciate your call. Hey, at 1 o'clock, I'm going to be featuring an interview with Wayne Besson. This guy is over the top. He is gay, and he's exposing the myth of the ex-gay. Remember, have you seen that, like, on television and the cover of Newsweek? Rick Fox is using my link to reality. Have you ever seen that the ex-gay, that they kind of pray away the gay? You've never seen this? Well, Wayne Besson, I mean, wait till you hear this interview. It is incredible. And a lot of these guys that claim that they prayed away the gay, that he has outed them, that Wayne Besson has outed these, because you got these right-wing Christians that are, again, I mean, these are people, these busybodies, you know, that have no business of their own, or have plenty business of their own, but decide instead to butt into other people's business. And they're gonna pray away the gay, as Wayne Besson said in the interview, that these people think that that gays are, in fact, like naughty heterosexuals, you know, so they can actually just pray a little to the Lord, and then they will become you know, a nice suburban heterosexual couple or person. Anyways, Wayne Besson has exposed a number of these favorites of these far-right wingers posing as Christians, like, you know, Falwell and Robertson and all that. So, they, you know, they're on the cover of Newsweek, and then Besson finds them at gay bars in Washington, D.C. So it's an interesting interview, and that'll be in about 50 minutes. And followed by Adolph Reed, Jr., a prof at the New School for Social Research in New York City, about free higher education. I posed the question to him right at the beginning, like, you know, if we all of a sudden were going to charge tuition for high school, people would go nuts. But why is there such an extraordinarily high price for what higher education? Why isn't that free as well? Well, one reason, of course, we can't afford it. We're wasting our fortune on Bush's follies. 313-298-WRIF, call talkyes at yahoo.com. You can email me. I'm Peter Werby. Hi, you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, this is Gail. I'm calling from Ann Arbor, and you're talking about two things that are very dear to my heart. First of all, I was 11-year-old in living in Vietnam when Kennedy was shot.
Really?
And so I've, you know, it's been, well, Vietnam is, I lived in Vietnam longer than just about anywhere else I've lived since my whole life. But more importantly, why I'm calling tonight is that I'm one of the workers on strike at Borders, downtown store in Ann Arbor.
Well, good.
So I've been standing out there for the last week, stopping traffic going into that store, and we're real pleased with the way the community has come together, shown us support, and are, for the most part, just walking right on by Borders and not shopping there.
Now, good, and that's what people should do, I mean, to support, I mean, on one hand, it's an act of human solidarity to support people that have given up their income for a while in order to increase their wages and living standards, but it's also, and I don't think people realize, it's also an investment in their living standards and their wages, because what you win affects the, you know, the wage structure and the benefits and whatever that other people will get in the Ann Arbor region as well. So even at the most selfish level, people have, if you're middle class or working class, have a vested interest in supporting these union struggles.
Well, and we've been finding a lot of support. We've met with UAW Leadership Council for Region 1A. We've met with AFL-CIO in Lansing. We've had Wobblies on the line with us. I mean, we've had people from, you know, all over the place coming and standing. I mean, there's not very many of us. So, you know, for a small store. I mean, it's a big store for Borders, but there's only about 20 of us trying to, you know, cover this picket line, and so we're really depending on the entire community for their support in manning that. And they've been bringing food to us. They've been honking their horns for us. They've been coming and singing to us. So it's been really an amazing experience standing out there.
I heard even the Raging Grannies were out
there. Yes, the Raging Grannies were out there yesterday, and we had one come back about 10 o'clock last night with her scooter and picketed with us singing and some of the lyrics that they had written specific to our strike. And that was really cool. We really enjoyed that. The Raging or the Radical Cheerleaders have been out with cheers that are specific to our fight as well.
Gail, did you know that the Radical Cheerleaders is actually like an international phenomenon now?
Yes. I didn't.
I just read an article about them. These are people that kind of young men and women that do the kind of like a rah-rah cheerleading thing, except
they are,
that
they're incredible.
They do social justice issues.
Yeah,
let me just kind of speak to or clear up something. You said that Wobblies are on the line, and people might think you meant like drunks or something, but Wobblies is the nickname for the old industrial workers of the world that began, I believe, in 1905, and so they're close to celebrating their 100th anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And their nickname, people aren't exactly sure why they were ever called the Wobblies, but they were out there, and they're still an active union force. Now, Gail, I'm glad to hear that the border strikers are getting all this support, because there are people like myself that are, you know, what are we, 40, 50 miles away, that if there were support picket lines at the stores like in Detroit and Southfield and Birmingham, I mean, I'd be there in a second. Is there anything like that in the works?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we you'll be hearing more about it later, but yes, we expect to be starting that tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good, because me and my mates, we're out there to support the labor movement. I know there's Jobs with Justice. I hosted a dinner for the group a few Saturdays ago, and there were a couple of...
You met Hal and Jim, I'll bet.
Yeah, Hal almost had everybody weeping.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a very, very dramatic presentation. Indeed.
And Jim's grandfather was in the Flint sit-down strike, low those many years ago.
Yeah.
And so he has strong heritage, and that his story can choke you up, too.
Hmm. Well, there, I don't want to... Maybe I shouldn't even say this publicly. The Flint sit-down strike. That's where the auto workers occupied the auto plant until General Motors agreed to negotiate with the union.
Yeah.
Huh.
To recognize the union.
Yeah. Wow. What an old-fashioned concept. You know, there's a book. I can't think of the name of it. Three Strikes. It's called Three Strikes. You ever see it in your store before you were on strike?
I'm sorry, I don't.
Okay.
I don't recall it.
But there is an account, and I interviewed the woman about what happened in the 1930s. Once that there were these sit-down strikes in these plant in General Motors, that it began happening all over the country, and what they called shop girls at the time, actually pretty young women, 16, 17, 18, 19 years old. Had this sit-in at this Woolworths in Detroit, demanding a union, and they were in there for days. People brought them food. The striking General Motors workers, were picketed outside. But don't consider that. This is the 21st century, not the 1930s. We wouldn't want anybody doing anything like that.
But we are.
Okay, Gail.
There's been 20 efforts, probably approximately 20 efforts over the last 10 years to organize in various stores. This is the first one that's actually gone to strike, and we're working with the Minneapolis store, who's almost to the point of striking. But we've been hearing from Borders workers all over the country. We interested in what we're doing, wanting to see how it's working. When Borders Corporate, which is right here in Ann Arbor, advertised overtime to Borders workers in Southeast Michigan to come, break our strike. We had Borders workers coming out and walking our picket line rather than cross our picket line. And so there's a lot of support, within the Borders stores, and I'll have to say at corporate, we hear from them as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's an outrage. I mean, I just took it upon myself to find the Borders phone number and just called them.
Thank you. And
said that I would never enter their store again. I said it used to be my favorite, but that they've fallen so far in my estimate that they would have to go a long way to win back, our family's, what do you call it, purchase ship? I don't know, whatever. All right, Gail.
Well...
Strong. It's going to be tough. Bad weather. They always do that. I mean, this is like Bush, man. He starts, going to start this war in the middle of the winter. So,
but this is prime season for Borders.
Oh yeah,
best time of the year to be out stopping people from walking in and letting them know, why we're out there for their unfair labor practices and their really poor. Wages and benefits. I mean, if you can afford your benefits, fine, but they're not going to help you, pay for them.
How were you an 11-year-old in Vietnam in 1963?
My dad was as a surgeon, and he was medical director for an American construction company that had contracts with the U.S. Navy throughout South Vietnam. So he had clinics all over South Vietnam.
Really?
We vacationed in a lot of the places that they really bombed off the map. But we were just one of many American families out there. By the time we left in end of 64, it was getting pretty tense. I mean, they were recommending that we all leave the country. But there were, up until that point, there were 700 kids in an American high school there.
Wow.
Which gives you some idea that there were a ton of Americans there. But I saw an entirely different Vietnam than, what the typical Vietnam vet saw, because we were there when we had the run of the country. We got to know we lived right in the neighborhoods and knew the Vietnamese. There were many times my dad was the only Western doctor in the country, and so we Became very well acquainted with the diplomatic corps and were oftentimes included in activities at the embassy. And it was a very interesting, interesting life. I was lucky that I was the oldest one in the family of five that were over there for 6 years.
You haven't been back, or have you?
No, I haven't. My youngest sister, who was born there shortly after we arrived, has been back. She went back a couple years ago and had an amazing experience over a month there. But no, I haven't been back.
Do you speak Vietnamese?
Well, I did at one point, but I don't think I could do much more than count to 10 or greet you at this point. It's been so long.
Can you say boycott borders in Vietnamese?
I wish I could. No, I can't.
All right, Gail. Thank you so much. I'll see you on the picket line.
All right. Thank you.
By the way, actually, if people in the Ann Arbor area, besides passively, which is good, not shopping at borders, if they want to be active, are you guys out there on a regular basis at the store on, what is it, Liberty, right? Liberty at State.
Stores open 96 hours a week, and we're out there 96 hours a week.
Great. All right. See you on the picket line.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks, Gail. Let's see. Debbie writes in Borders Readers United. You can go to BordersReadersUnited.blogspot. You know that deal? BlogSpot.com. BordersReadersUnited.blogspot.com. You go to my website as well. Peter Werbe, PeterWerbe. Pardon me, .com. And you can link up to these good folks, support their struggle. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. My name is Adania, and I'm one of the striking workers
at
the store as well.
Yeah.
I worked with Gail for the last 5 years. I just wanted to call in and make a couple of points about some of the things that people have said. I know you said that Borders is probably spending a lot of money trying to bust the union, and that is true. They have hired Jackson Lewis, the notoriously anti-union law firm, and they've employed them over the last year during our negotiations, which I'm sure is costing them, quite a pretty penny. And in addition, like Gail said, they're paying people overtime to come into the store and work while we're on strike. They've also hired a security company, and they have security guards standing in their doorway, usually about six at a time, which is far more than, they don't even need one, but.
Well, the Detroit newspapers hired this goon squad of 1,200 who wound up attacking strikers and doing great damage, but they were really awful. But it may, in fact, work to your benefit. I mean, most people that go into bookstores don't expect to be met by six goons at the door.
Yeah, they're essentially acting as doormen. They open the door for the customers as they come in. So, but it is a little intimidating, and I think that's more what it's for, is to intimidate us. But luckily, we haven't had any problems with them. They're not goons in any way. They've have left us alone for the most part.
Oh, that's
good.
They're
really nice people. So.
Well, I heard that the Borders store had actually called the police 30 times on UFO.
Yeah. Yes.
For what? What are they saying you're doing?
Anything. They called us. They called about noise. They called about exactly where we were on the sidewalk. So at one point we had to, rather than walking one continuous line around the sidewalk, we had to walk two separate lines so that the entire area, the whole sidewalk in front of the door, wouldn't be blocked at all. And they've called about noise and people standing too close to the windows, and anything you can think of they would call. Yeah, they've definitely wasted our police force's time. One night that the police were out there, we did have a local business robbed at the time that they were out, attending to us, which, we weren't doing anything illegal. So it's a shame that they're also wasting that.
Well, Adania, Gail said that you were going to expand the support and make it more active. I think that's very important.
Definitely. Actually, I think the only way that we're going to get Borders to listen to us and to actually come in and not negotiate for the first time. They haven't even attempted to negotiate over the last 9 months. So I think that definitely community support is the one thing that's going to get them to listen and decide that they need to come back in and start negotiating with us. They've made it clear from the very beginning that they don't really care about their employees in the way that they pay us and the way that they treat us and the health care that they're offering us and the benefits they're offering us. They've made it quite clear that you know, we can be replaced at any time with much cheaper labor. So it's really the community, by calling them and demanding that they give us a contract and end the strike now, and also coming out and showing the support, you know, when they see people out there on the picket line rather than coming in their store to shop.
Sure.
That's what's really going to send them a message.
Lawn signs.
I'm sorry?
Lawn signs. You know, like those signs that say no war and another family for peace. And
yes,
all.
Yes, we do have them.
Really?
Yes.
Well, I still have my no war sign up, and I think, I always think, wonder what that means to people. You know, here we got, you know, Bush has got us in this war, so yeah, I'll get one of those signs.
All right, yeah. Please, you know, go to the website, the Borders Readers website, and there's information there. There's also email contact there, and that's really the best way, you know, send an email and say, yes, I'm interested in helping. Yes, I'm interested in coming out and picketing at other stores. We're going to start an Adopt-A-Store program so that other people that, you know, in the community that want to go out and picket their local stores can
great.
You know, learn how to do that and,
yeah.
and get involved in that and also come out and support us at our stores. So
I'm there.
All right.
Thank you, Adanya.
Thank you for your support.
Sure. Glad to. 313-298-WRIF. Let's see here. Chris writes in, hey, Pete, I was thinking of a dilemma we on the left have. I was wondering if you could comment about it. When I watch the news about Iraq, I kind of want things to go bad there, even though my good friend is into Crete. If things get so bad, then maybe we will pull out and the U.S. will learn a lesson that violence and preemptive strikes are not a good foreign policy. But what should I really be what I really should be thinking is that the best for the Iraqi people, that everyone that loves us and there is no resistance, that would be the best for them and the troops. But then why not invade the whole world? Well, you know, your thoughts or your hopes or whatever, Chris, aren't going to affect anything. I mean, the policy. I mean, George W. Bush made this catastrophic mistake. I mean, it's bad enough that it was based on a lie. And that all these now, 9,000 American casualties, thousands and thousands of Iraqis dead. 60% of people in Baghdad say their conditions have worsened. Man, I mean, they were living in pretty bad straits to begin with. Now there's these, you know, that they're getting a bead on U.S. helicopters, 17 young men and women dead. Yeah, this is all at the feet of George W. Bush. These are guys, these chicken hawks that never fought in wars when they could have. And now are sending off our men to kill and be killed. It's probably reason number 34 to impeach George W. Bush. But hopes or the kind of thoughts that you have. I mean, it's pretty easy to see, you know, when, you know, the position of the United States gets increasingly eroded there, you know, to think, you know, oh, good. You know, if you're opposed to the war. But the good comes at the expense of lives that never had to be wasted. This is a terrible thought, that all of those lives have been for essentially for nothing, or to take out this hideous dictator that was probably on his way out, was willing to cut this deal right at the last moment, that Bush purposely ignored because they wanted the war. Didn't matter how many Americans got chewed up. Didn't matter how many civilians got killed. What do they think? 7,000 Iraqi civilians. That they continue to die. That Americans continue to die. They just wanted their damn war. They knew that there was no weapons of mass destruction. They weren't working off of faulty intelligence. They knew there were no weapons of mass destruction. They wanted to be Bush to be the war president, and so he is. 313-298-WRIF. Hi, it's Night Call. You're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, how's it going?
Going good.
I used to work at Borders, and I quit for a lot of the reasons people are on strike right now. And there's kind of like a interesting irony with everything you've been mentioning tonight with the war and everything kind of tying in.
What's that?
Well, you started a war over here, and, you know, and I have a friend that's over there, and he's been saying a lot of things like the media is making it out to be a lot worse than it actually is. And that's what he's saying, and he's a, you know, small percent of what he's seeing over there. But then you kind of start thinking the aspect of the media is, you know, the corporations own the media, and they're sending these messages that, like, all these horrible things are going on. Well, what they're actually doing is, like, spreading this fear to the consumers. So, you know, they distrust the government, so then they get sent out to buy up stuff and buy up things. And it kind of brings it into the point we were talking about with Borders. So I actually used to work there. And I was kind of wanting to get into actual treatment of the employees is like, you know, you work there for 3 years and, you know, you make $8.50 an hour and you can start at McDonald's and make more money than that.
Wow.
And then you work overtime. A lot of people working overtime, you know, normal overtime, you get time and a half for your overtime.
Right.
And they're not getting time and a half. They're just getting regular hour pay.
Now, that actually is covered by state law. So if they're doing that, they're in serious violation of the law.
And then the problem I had is actually the reasons I ended up quitting and not wanting to work there anymore was because they were having they were saying they were having a lot of issues with money. There was a point where we had no bags to give to our customers anymore. We're running out of bags.
Really?
They wouldn't let us get more hours. They wouldn't hire more people to work there. I mean, I personally was working the job of like seven people. I was, you know, doing the receiving in the back room, receiving all the shipments. I was shelving an entire section by myself and working in three other sections and expected to help the customers as well. And they wouldn't hire people to help because they said they had no money, and they wouldn't let me get overtime because places like Borders and a lot of, especially the bookstores, they're really against overtime.
Sure.
They will not let people have overtime at all costs. And what you kind of find out is, like, at the end of the year, they try to keep under hours. They have this hours that they're allotted for the entire year. And if they stay under those hours, the manager, general manager of the store, gets a bonus.
Great.
And so they're making more money.
You know, if you've heard the show, I mean, I always talk in these very technical terms about fixed capital and variable capital. Fixed capital means what you got to pay your distributors for your books, for, you know, your counters, your cash register. And variable capital, that's us. Because you can, you know, because we're, you know, in this market. Our labor is a commodity on the market. And one of the things that unions do is that they artificially raise the price of labor, which is good. It's bad for the employers, maybe, because they always want to soak us for as much, little, how would you say it, either as much, I guess, soak us for as much as possible. They want us to work as much to get as little as possible. So one of the things that the free market does, so if you go to China or, you know, or Mexico or Indonesia, you can wind up getting this variable capital, this labor, for maybe a dollar an hour in Mexico, a dollar a day in China or Indonesia. Unions artificially raise this price, and I mean, that's a good thing. But yeah, I was thinking about it as you were aptly describing all of that, is that the CEO is, you know, the part of this variable capital. In other words, the Borders CEO makes $23 million a year. Well, they could give him $3 million a year, which is where I come from. It's a pretty, fairly princely sum. And then he could, you know, that would solve the whole problem. He's got another $20 million for his workers, right?
Oh, yeah. It was like, well, that was the whole point of the thing, is like, it was all built up to this year, because that year they were telling me all this stuff. I read an email that was sent into the store, and they were congratulating all their employees because it was the first year they made it on the Fortune 500 list.
Huh.
And they were thanking us, even though they were, you know, screwing us.
they it's called unmitigated gall. Thank you so much for the story.
Thank you.
I appreciate it as much, even though it was a horror story. Now, this, I don't get this. This is a sign, Mike from Berkeley. Mike wrote into calltalkyes@yahoo.com, and he just returned 30 minutes ago from the Des Moines, Iowa. Oh, I see. He must have flown back. He was in Des Moines, Iowa, where he attended the Democratic Party's Jefferson Jackson dinner. The night was emceed by Hillary Clinton, who was cheered wildly when she was introduced. Now, I would probably like to see Hillary Clinton, although, I mean, there's a lot that I disagree with, what she's said, voted for, presided over, and all that. But she is the person that drives the conservatives the most nutty. So, I mean, in fact, I'd like to see her win the presidency and then invite Bill back into the House, like as the first man, right? Let's see. The night was emceed by Hillary. Before the dinner, the Star Spangled Banner was sung by the Des Moines Gay Men's Chorus, 40 or so gay men who were also enthusiastically greeted by the 4,500 people at the dinner. The performance was very powerful, and the audience gave them a standing ovation as they left the stage. It was pretty amazing to see this in the heartland of America. Yeah, you know, I mean, so you're talking about people here that don't have the prejudices that so fill the brains and mouths of these right-wingers. But that's pretty cool. They have a gay choir singing the Star Spangled Banner. Gotta love it. He says things were pretty lively and pretty active. We'll be right back.
Hey, thanks for checking out WRIF.com. While you're here, don't forget to join the Riff Cyber Crew. It's your ticket to a totally unfair internet advantage for the Riff on-air giveaways.
Plus, you can win stuff that we don't even give away on the air.
Awesome internet exclusives from WRIF.com and much more.
Oh, that sounds great.
Make sure you sign up with the Riff Cyber Crew today.
Just click over to the Cyber Crew page while you're listening.
Any questions?
And thanks again for listening.
It's a dream.
It's a miracle.
It's great for women, too.
To WRIF.com.
More Riff Rock is coming right up.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like Mexican Town on Bagley in Detroit. You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Dr. Roche, put your best face and body forward with help from Dr. Roche.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
Me and my boyfriend, we used to have threesomes like a couple times a month with
okay.
one of my girlfriends.
Really? A couple times
and
a month?
Every time we would do it, we would try to like overdo our last time. And we decided to blindfold one another. And when it was my turn to get blindfolded, they just doused me down with whipped cream and was squeezing oranges all over my body and just Ooh. Kissing me all over. And he was kissing all over my...
Where do you meet people?
I go to college, and I meet girls that way. And, I mean, I'm really comfortable.
Oh, man. Wife. You go to college, pick up the co-eds, and bring them home for his enjoyment.
But oh, my God.
I really found that I enjoyed myself watching, even when she would perform oral sex on him. And, like...
You like that?
I would, like, tell home. Her, let me show you how to do it right.
Oh, no kidding. Oh. What a wild time you have.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
I hear you.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good. 101
WRIF.
Wow, you're shouting at me.
Riff.
Broadcasting worldwide on the web, you're listening to 101 WRIF at WRIF.com, a service of Greater Media. Keep it here for more Riff Rock coming right up.
The Emerald Ball.
The Emerald Ball.
The Emerald Ballroom.
Kick your club life into overdrive. Jumpstart your weekend at the Emerald. The Emerald Ballroom in downtown Mount Clemens, where sight and sound are combined to thrill your senses in one of the most unique rooms in the Motor City. Each and every Friday night, join the Riff's Carolyn Stone and DJ Rubik's Cube, along with over 1,000 partygoers, and see for yourself why the Emerald Ballroom stands out above the rest. From the VIP lofts overlooking their spacious dance floor, to the Rock Room, and the numerous watering grottos in between. Cover the room in style Friday nights at the Emerald Ballroom with 101 WRIF. The Emerald Ballroom, 31 North Walnut Street, downtown Mount Clemens. It's Detroit's biggest Friday night dance party.
The Emerald Ballroom.
With the station where the weekend never ends.
Riff Rocks.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants.
Like McVee's on Telegraph Road in Southfield. You can
purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's five best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
You're logged on at WRIF.com. We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talked to Delbert about the unfortunate Bennifer breakup. Delbert was quite hip to her excessive consumption of new and strange hoagie.
Whew, that skirt would smoke, wouldn't it?
Delbert, can you deal with a big ass?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a big ass won't turn you around, huh?
I'd rather have a big ass than a broom handle, you know.
I know exactly what you mean. Because she's got a big firm ass, and it's kind of nice.
Yeah, you know, it don't just move all around when you pat it.
No, it doesn't.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
Hey.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's good.
101
WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
Riff. Is the MC. Man. And I must be getting a following in Iowa because Matthew is listening in Sioux City, Iowa. He's listening at WRIF.com, and he says, you were the first talk show host and broadcaster in the media that actually talked about how unions worked and about workers' rights. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty sad that I'm the only one. Now, this I've been hearing about this, and this is a little unbelievable to me. This comes from The Independent. It's a newspaper in London, one of the papers that is part of the welcoming posse for Bush, who's over there spending tens of millions of dollars on this state visit, where he is roundly despised. Anyways, this you go to independent.co.uk. Independent.co.uk. It says, U.S. agrees to international control of its troops in Iraq. I mean, I just can't believe this. The United States accepts that to avoid humiliating failure in Iraq, it needs to bring its forces quickly under international control and speed the handover of power. This signals a major policy shift by the U.S., and they precede George Bush's state visit to this week to London, during which he and Tony Blair will discuss an exit strategy for forces in Iraq. That's a little hard for me to believe, but that's been all over the Internet, that they're talking about putting American troops under United Nations control. I mean, it's bad enough, the casualties that the United States is sustaining for this awful mistake that Bush made. Let alone if they were under, say, United Nations commander in these. So I don't believe this. I mean, this would be a political black eye for them. But we'll see. This is what the Independent of London is saying. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening. Hey, you with me? Hey. Bye. All right. Hi, WRIF, you're on the air.
Hi. I was commenting on President Bush's war in Iraq.
Sure.
And what I wanted to make a comment about is that we need to look at the motivation behind this war, and I think that most would agree that it had to do with the terrorist attacks of September 11th. And we need to look at the motivation behind those attacks. I do understand we have a need to defend ourselves, and my point would be is just like in our daily lives, if you're going about standing in line at a bank or a store or anything and somebody were to come up and just blindside you and knock you to the ground, the first thing you would do is get up and defend yourself, but the next thing that you would do, or any reasonable, intelligent person would say, why did this happen? What was the reason for this? And the point is I think you're going to find that the reason for this is the U.S.'s blind support for the Israeli situation, and why we continue to blindly support them, and to the tune of, when I say support them, to the tune of $3.5 billion a year for a long time. Now, this isn't for humanitarian aid for Israel.
No.
Israel has a huge, huge military that is bought and paid for by the U.S. of A.
Well, we had our choice. We could have either given oh, I don't know what it amounts up to, $50 billion, $100 billion to Israel in military aid, which essentially, again, you got to remember, this is their purchases, by and large, come from American corporations. Or we could have had a national health program or a national rail system or something like that. And also, that probably would have encouraged the Israelis to quickly have settled their land dispute with the Palestinians. By the way, the only thing I would take issue with you is that the war in Iraq was launched for solely one reason, according to George W. Bush, the possession of weapons of mass destruction by the Iraqis that were on a hair trigger alert and about to be launched against the United States and people in the region. So all the rest of this stuff about terrorism and September 11th, this was just all BS that came into play a little later.
Well, thank you very much, and yes, I do agree. I'm just saying the reason that the American public would even buy into a war.
Oh, yeah.
If September 11th would have not existed and George Bush would have presented the theory of weapons of mass destruction, you know, he would have overwhelmingly been denied, you know.
I agree.
The American public. It was just a catalyst that was used. Listen to some of your comments. One of the things I'd also like to mention is, why do we continue blindly supporting? And I have no idea why the media really avoids the subject of, the reason we do is Israeli has the largest lobby in the Capitol. Why does the media not address the lobbying effort and the fact that these congressmen and senators are basically getting paid off and have lavish lifestyles bestowed upon them by these lobbyists? They walk away with their political war chests. That's money in their pocket. We believe that Hillary Clinton's was financed basically, and I'm not saying I'm a Democrat or Republican, and please don't take it wrong. I'm not anti-Semitic. I'm you know, not at all. That's not my point here.
It's
there
not,
are wonderful, loving Jewish people in this world that
it's,
have nothing
it's not,
to do with.
It's not anti-Semitic to criticize Israeli government policy. In fact, everything you've said and everything I've ever said, critical of Israeli policies towards dominating the West Bank, is said every single day by Israeli peace groups, Jewish Israeli peace groups. So it's really a mistake to have conflated anti-Israeli policy with anti-Semitism, which is a whole separate separate subject. Hey, I'll tell you, you may have this information already, but there's a website. I don't have it here, but if you go to my web, you have internet access?
Yes, I do. Yes.
My last name is spelled Werbe, peterwerbe.com, and there's a website called, I think it's called If Americans Only Knew. And it says temporarily unavailable. They're doing system upgrades. But it's called ifamericansknew.org. And it has a list of facts and figures about what's going on there that is so startling. And you understand why these Jewish peace groups in Israel have the kind of criticism they do. And you understand why the last four heads of the Shin Bet, essentially the Israeli Secret Service that brutally participated in the suppression of Palestinians and has been condemned by everybody from the Red Cross to Amnesty International. The last four heads of Shin Bet have just recently came out and condemned Ariel Sharon's policies, say that it just it's going to lead to a disaster for Israel, that it's only creating more militants. And that the first thing they ought to do is withdraw all the settlements from the West Bank. All right, thank you so much.
Thank you. One final comment to your listeners, that with freedom comes responsibility. We have to look at our political system and see how our doctrines and policies are formed. It's Americans' responsibility. With our freedoms come the responsibility to check our government and to look into this stuff. I understand football scores are important and all that stuff, but the way our government ran is, and I'm afraid so many Americans have no idea or even care how it gets done.
I got you. You're absolutely right. There is a grave responsibility, and it goes beyond just kind of seeing a trailer on the bottom of Fox News and thinking you're getting the information. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing tonight?
Good.
I'm a former striking newspaper worker,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to thank you for your support because you were one of the few media members that backed us the whole way through.
Well, thank you. I was proud and pleased to do it, and as a union member myself, a longtime union member of American Federation of Television and Radio Artists, thought it was my duty. It's called mutual aid.
That's right, and that's the reason I'm calling, because I just caught the end of your conversation with the lady from Borders Books, and they have my full support, and I know all the members back at the newspapers were going to be behind them. The one thing that was interesting when I heard her speak about the phone calls to the police department, the local police, and the waste of time and effort, we had that same situation out at Sterling Heights, as you remember, and that was through Mr. Steve Duchesne.
No, it was a little worse there. I mean, the cops love the overtime. Remember what they called the
Treasure Island.
Let me tell people, though, Mound Road, where the Sterling Heights Detroit News plant is, they have a big island in the middle, or it's like a boulevard, and the cops called it Treasure Island. And weren't some of them making like $20,000 a year in overtime?
Oh, absolutely, and it was all the older ones because their last 5 years went towards their pension.
So it was all just a racket. And then the Detroit newspapers, the firm that owns both the papers, they paid off directly the Sterling Heights cops.
Absolutely, yes.
Talk about a racket.
And the interesting thing is, back with the Duchesne issue, Councilman Romano, just came out and said how nobody died over the situation, or, you know, with Duchesne's lying and that. Well, unfortunately, somebody did die, because when the police were blocking Mound Road and holding the scabs in the left lane, unfortunately, an innocent person went and crashed into the back of one of the vehicles and ended up dying from that.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and it was just, it was just a smug comment that nobody died. Well, it wouldn't have happened if Duchesne wasn't, and the city wasn't bought for.
Yeah. Well, I remember people used to chant at the Sterling Heights cops, what was it, bought and paid for?
Bought and paid? Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And then,
disgraceful. They performed absolutely disgracefully.
And the situation still is that I just was hired back 1 year ago.
Really?
Full-time, as a full-time employee there. And so that was 7.5 years. I'm a pressman. We still have 20 pressmen that are not hired back.
Boy.
And they have those replacement workers in there. And you walk into the place, and it's a shame, because the quality of employees they have in there now is gone way downhill.
Well, I never did understand, in many ways, we look at the example of unionized firms, particularly in this area, the Big Three, and to see how it's worked well for everyone involved. In fact, there's recently the United Auto Workers, the UAW, has been circulating this consultant who wrote this paper saying that big companies are not hurt at all by unionization. And it just gets to be, you know, some kind of like just psycho bug up their butt. They got to get rid of the unions, or they can't let a union in. Doesn't hurt their bottom line, as it turns out. It doesn't make them less competitive. And what it does, though, it energizes. I thought the whole idea of capitalism was commerce and buying. Well, the more money that people have, the more money they spend. You give it off to the rich people, the way Bush has done with these tax cuts. Just put it in the bank, you know. You and I get some money. What the hell do? We go right out and spend it, right?
Well, that exactly. And the funny part was, the newspapers told us back in the early 90s that. You know, if we made them a bunch of money, we were going to see it. And sure enough, you know, they wanted like a $50 million profit, and we were going to see a lot of it. And of course, they get the profit, and then next thing you know, they're locking us out the doors and
yep.
having a big strike. And you know, and so we ended up, we took $1,000 bonus 2 years in a row with no pay raise, because they kept saying, in 3 years, we're gonna take care of you. Well, they took care of us, all right.
They did. I still can't bring myself to read either the News or the Free Press, to tell you the truth.
It's so hard to print the paper and have it sitting there looking at you. And I got to admit, I will read some articles.
No, I read it from time to time.
But the quality of journalism is
it sucks.
Gone.
It is terrible. All right, thank you so much.
All right, thank you, Peter.
All right, support those border strikers as well. I mean, I don't know if I can make heads and tails out of this. Let me see. This is from, who's it for? From Rover Roll, I guess. I agree with you about, about Hillary. You know, they would, she would tick off the conservative, but she is bitchy and makes my stomach churn. But anything is better than any Republican. yeah, I got to tell you, I was at a dinner with her, and Steve Jokic was hosting it. And I don't know, too long a story. Just I'll just leave, just drop names. How about that? See, he says, I'll be in downtown Ann Arbor Monday. It's already Monday. And I'll give some support to the Borders people. Goons at the doorway, I'll flip off. All right. Let's go on. Where are we going to, line one? Yeah. All right. Hi, WRIF, and you're on the air. Good evening.
Hello, Peter.
Hi.
It's, Pierre calling from Windsor.
Hi, Pierre.
How are you?
God, they don't call you Peary there?
No, like that's what you had said last time about the...
street.
The street, exactly. Yeah.
God, I did.
No, I'm called Pierre here.
Good, good, good.
I just wanted to make a comment about Border CEO making $23 million. Really, it reminded me what I just read in Michael Moore's Dude, Where's My Country?
Mm-hmm.
It says in the manufacturing sector, British CEOs make 24 times as much as their average workers, the widest gap in Europe. German CEOs only make 15 times more than their employees, while Swedish CEOs get 13 times as much. And he says, but here in the U.S., the average CEO makes 411 times the salary of their blue-collar workers. Now, I just went to Borders about a month ago, and I'm a school teacher, so I got a classroom discount card, which gives me, I believe, an additional 20% off. But needless to say, I won't be shopping there.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that I think is disgraceful. I also want to make a comment about another European factor. When I lived in France, I was quite surprised to find out that students do not pay to go to university in France, and which is pretty much the case in all the other European countries. And the thing is we do not, in Canada at least, pay higher taxes than they do. So why is it that our tuition, a kid goes to school for 4 years and he's coming out indebted already of $50,000? It's just, it's unspeakable. And yet your government, for example, has the money to, like, billions, hundreds of billions of dollars to spend on the war. I think it's just totally immoral, bankrupting future generations here.
I agree. It, turning our college students, ones that can't afford it, into debtors. And actually, coming up, I don't know how late you're going to be up, but at 1:30, I'm going to have a segment, an interview with Adolf Reed, who's talking about free higher education.
I'll be listening to that.
Thank you, Pierre. Thanks for making our show international.
And, Peter, thank you for the great job you do every weekend. Really appreciate it. You got a great website, too.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. Yeah. Check out the website, peterwerbe.com, P-E-T-E-R-W-E-R-B-E.com. And I've got new stuff coming on there all the time. A lot of you send me stuff as well. So is there anything else? I thought there was one other thing I wanted to leave you with. I'm sure I will remember it as soon as I push this button. My mother used to say, if it's important, you'll remember it. But I'm off to Miami for the Free Trade Area of the Americas ministerial meetings. Going to be big protests there. Check it out. Check out the issues, too. They really affect all of us.
November 2003. David Hall with Trudy Daniels. Trudy,
it's the standard greeting.
How are you?
I'm fine, David.
You like that greeting?
I like that greeting because it's so reassuring. I know that something good is coming when I hear it.
You know it's timely information.
I know that, yeah, you're going to tell me about something I'm going to want to do. I have never done so much refinancing and just smart things since meeting you.
What do you know about interest only?
Interest only is where you pay the interest only and then the principal when you want to. And the principal, and it's not a bad thing anymore. It's not some scary guy in an office.
That's right.
Right.
What kind of choice is it?
It's a smart choice.
Smart choice.
What it is.
That's
there
right.
You schooled me.
It's a Q&A. It's a Q&A going on here. Interest only, smart choice. Mortgage experts, only place. Exclusive.
Rock Financial. Call the mortgage experts today at 800-333-ROCK or visit them online at rockfinancial.com.
Quicken Loans Company, equal housing lender.
Thank you.
That could work.
You're not a bad person, but occasionally bad things happen to good people. Have you had your license suspended for insurance reasons, ID fraud, failure to appear, driving under suspension, out-of-state issues, accident judgment, traffic situations, DUI, bad checks, controlled substance, property taxes, child support, or any other reason? Then listen up, because Suspended Drivers License, Inc. can help you. Suspended Drivers License, Inc. is a private agency, not a law firm, assisting to help in the reinstatement and restoration of your driver's license. Suspended Drivers License, Inc. is here to help you retain your independence and your ability to be productive. Chances are you're a good person who simply made an honest mistake. Don't let a legal snarl set you back. Please call Suspended Drivers License, Inc. at 248-975-8788 and leave a detailed message with your name, phone number, and the reason your license was suspended or revoked. Help with the restoration of your driver's license and the independence that comes with it are only a phone call away. Call Suspended Drivers License, Inc. today at 248-975-9788. That's Suspended Drivers License, Inc. at 248-975-8788. 248-975-8788. Call today.
Everyone knows that Tubby's has the best-tasting grilled submarines. But did you know that Tubby's actually has over 100 different varieties of hot and cold subs? Or did you know that you can order any of Tubby's all-white meat chicken, tender turkey breast, or delicious ham subs all off the low-fat menu? Let's not forget that Tubby's Grilled Submarines offers a full line of catering services, which includes party platters, cookie platters, fresh from the garden specialty salads, and, of course, Michigan's famous party subs. Tubby's can cater all your needs. But, of course, you know that because you've been making Tubby's Grilled Submarines Detroit's favorite sub shop since 1968. Come into any one of Tubby's 95 Metro Detroit locations and enjoy their 35th anniversary specials, like their mouth-watering 6-inch famous sub for only $1.35, November 16th through the 19th. And while you're there, don't forget to register for your chance to win a trip to Puerto Plata in the Dominican Republic or a weekend getaway to Soaring Eagle. Thanks, Detroit, for making Tubby's Grilled Submarines Detroit's favorite sandwich shop.
Men, how do you like to last even longer in the bedroom? Now you can with Maxtral, the new climax control system for men. Maxtral lets you last longer than you ever thought possible, so you can prolong the pleasure and maximize the control. Maxtral is scientifically formulated to give you the kind of stamina you want and a woman never forgets. Maxtral is for men of all ages. It's available without a prescription, and it can give you more satisfaction than ever before. Now you can make the pleasure go on and on with Maxtral, maximum control for men. Ask your doctor about Maxtral or call now and try Maxtral risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708. Prolong the pleasure, maximize the control, and see how much longer you last with Maxtral. Call 1-800-256-6708. 1-800-256-6708.
MGM Grand has taken the game of craps to an all-new level with the Golden Arm Challenge.
Yeah.
More cash, more prizes, more chances to win.
Do you have the Midas touch, the Golden Arm? Then roll into MGM Grand now and play the challenge.
MGM Grand's Golden Arm Challenge is awarding $500 plus other exciting prizes every day. It's easy to enter and it's easy to win.
Just enter a live craps game at MGM Grand. Get more than 10 passes on a single hand and you're in the challenge.
The person with the most passes in a single day wins the $500 daily prize. That's $500 7 days a week. You can't afford to miss out. Ask any craps pit supervisor for details.
The game of craps just got more exciting.
Yeah.
It's the Golden Arm Challenge, and it's only at MGM Grand.
Must have at least 10 passes to win. Must be at least 21 and a Players Club member to participate. See the craps pit supervisor for details.
1/2 mile south of I-75 on the Lodge Freeway.
Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby, on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Good morning. Thank you very much for joining me. A pleasure to be with you as usual. I'd like to take up a subject this program that, it's one of those part of what haunts our nation. One of those things that I usually talk about. You ever heard that quote I use from William Burroughs about busybodies, people that don't have any business of their own so that they're always butting into other people's business? Well, this affects this in a very odd way. The book is Anything But Straight, Unmasking the Scandals and Lies Behind the Ex-Gay Myth. And our guest is Wayne R. Besson, and he has written this book for Harrington Park Press. And Wayne Besson is a nationally recognized advocate for gay and lesbian rights. He's been a frequent guest on leading news and political talk shows. He's been on the NBC Nightly News, CNN's Talk Back Live. He's even faced Bill O'Reilly. He's in our studio. Wayne Besson, thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me today.
You know, maybe what we ought to do is set the terms of this, and I think I could summarize it by saying that what you're doing is shattering the myth that gay people can change into heterosexuals through prayer and therapy. Now, when all of a sudden did this come about?
Well, these ministries have been around since the early 70s. However, most people didn't know about them till 1998 when 15 religious right groups sunk $1 million into these groups to prove that gay people could pray away the gay through going to a preacher and a little bit of expensive therapy. Now, these right-wing groups like Focus on the Family, the Family Research Council, the Christian Coalition, took out full-page ads in the USA Today, the Washington Post, and New York Times, among others, that featured so-called ex-gays. And since then, this has been on the cultural landscape. And my job, while I used to work with the Human Rights Campaign, was to show that these groups didn't work, and they ruined lives. And I think I've been pretty successful when you look at some of the failures I've uncovered.
As a gay man, I'm making the correct assumption.
Yes.
When you hear gay sexuality referred to as a lifestyle or a choice, because that really goes to the heart of what we're talking about, what's your reaction to that?
Well, it's infuriating, and you were so right. The extreme right groups look at the polls, and they see that people who think homosexuality is a casual choice, like what you're going to wear, what you're going to eat for breakfast, are against laws that protect us from discrimination. Those who believe it is not a choice support gay rights laws. The religious right, seeing these polls, said we're going to jump on this ex-gay bandwagon and attack gay people and try to convince Americans that it is a casual choice.
Mm-hmm. My friend Jeff Montgomery, who's head of the Triangle Foundation.
Great work they do.
Yeah, they do. He says, I thought that'd be a good idea. I would choose to be gay so then I could be discriminated in employment, attacked by homophobes physically and verbally. Where does the notion come from within this right-wing religious view that gay life is sexuality is something that is casually accepted as a way to kind of party or be irresponsible, I guess?
Well, I mean, first, it's definitely not a choice. People can only choose to accept who they are. They can choose to be in the closet. Now, the right wing has to embrace this because it doesn't fit into their extremist theology that gay people can exist. We have to be heterosexuals who are behaving badly, because that's what they really believe we are. They don't. If you think about it, they don't believe there's such thing as a gay person. It's a heterosexual misbehaving. And they have to come up with that, because if not, then they have to accept, wait a second, these people are here, maybe God made them this way, what do we do now? It means we have to accept them or just be mean. Well, these ex-gay ministries and trying to show it's a choice is a lot better than this whole fire and brimstone routine they're having. It's really a kinder, gentler form of homophobia by presenting it as a casual choice.
Well, of course, there has been thousands of years of meanness within the Judeo-Christian tradition. Yeah. A large question, but since you've been an advocate, like for the Human Rights Campaign, you have your finger on the pulse of this. Gay life in America, is it easier now than it has been, say, in a generation?
Yes. It's divided sort of two ways right now. And the way it's divided, the major cities and in parts of Detroit, Washington, New York, West Hollywood, it's in San Francisco, it's very easy to be openly gay in a lot of quarters. I mean, there's still egregious examples of discrimination, people getting fired from their jobs, kicked out of their homes, but by and large, you can live openly gay and not have a problem. Now, there's the other America, the one that it's not just difficult to be gay, but maybe to be of another religion or to be any other type of minority. And people who are in these types of very conservative environments still find it extraordinarily difficult to come out, and that's what we're working to change. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that's going to happen. And the problem with these ex-gay ministries, it slows down the coming out process. It makes, instead of people accepting in these more conservative environments their gay friends and family, they say, well, why don't we just send you off to this ministry of course, they don't want to talk about the disasters and failures that have taken place in these ministries.
I sure want to talk about that. What about, successful stereotypes of gays? For one thing, as long as you have an adjective, as long as you talk like in Ferndale, the largest vote getter in the last election was gay. And so you would say gay councilman, or you would say black councilman. As long as you have this adjective, that's not just councilman or councilwoman, there still is a recognition of this as outside of the main mainstream or the norm.
And we're going to see that until it becomes boring. And there's just nothing you can do about that. People say they hate labels, but we are a people of language. And you must be able to describe people one way or the other. It's unfortunate that that gets stuck. But there's really what other way around it is there going to be until it becomes something that's no big deal. And maybe that might happen in 15 or 20 years. Maybe we won't have black city councilmen or gay city councilmen. But that certainly isn't the case today. That's why we just got to keep on fighting. I'll just also go back to when you said, what's it like to be gay today? You look at all the young men and women who are coming out at so much earlier ages these days. It's great. They don't have to play this game, and they don't have to try to be people they aren't and have phony marriages and sham weddings to try to protect themselves. They can be who they are at 13, 14 years old, and that is a huge advantage. And a lot of that has to do with the communications of today. Before, when I came out in 1988, when I was 18, people used to always say, I thought I was the only one. They don't say that anymore. They know through television, through the media, through the internet in particular, no matter where they are, both in the U.S. and the world, that there are gay people who are happy or living productive lives as openly gay people, and that they are not alone. And that has been the most incredible advance in our movement's history.
There's even a National Coming Out Day, which was October 11th. My guest is Wayne Vess, and he's written the book Anything But Straight, Unmasking the Scandals and Lies Behind the Ex-Gay Myth. We haven't even gotten to that yet. I have one more question about the way stereotypes previously about gay people were negative.
Now we're dressing everybody in Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. How things change. Of course, I could use a little help with that.
You look pretty sharp. Listen.
Well, I was dressed by a team.
Okay, there you go. How about this? I mean, how does this make you feel? Rather than a negative stereotype, we noticed a house went up for sale, and then I asked this older neighbor, I said, who bought it? And she said, a couple of gay guys. She said, that's wonderful. The house is going to be, it's going to be so well taken care of. So there's sort of this, it's still a stereotype, but it's positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's changed a lot. I think it has to do with the acceptance of gender roles and difference changing. I mean, it used to be a big deal, a woman in the military or a firefighter, and men were supposed to be a certain way all the time. And I think that's very constricting. I think some women want to be, police women and firefighters, and you have a lot of men who want to cut hair who might just be heterosexual, and they felt constrained before. So it's good that we're breaking out and allowing people to come out, not just as gay or straight, but as who they are and what they want to do so they can pursue their dreams.
All right, let's get to the core of Anything But Straight. And by the way, the website for this book is
AnythingButStraight.com. Again, AnythingButStraight.com. Give you all the information you need on this topic.
All right, and I'll have that on my website as well. Now, the idea that gay people can change into heterosexuals through prayer and therapy, people that have looked at the cover of Newsweek and other publications have said, praise the Lord. In fact, it's true. You can pray. What did you say? Pray the little.
Pray away the gay. Yeah. Amen, brother.
Well, here you have testimony of the individuals that said, I was gay. I was going down the wrong path. I went to God or Jesus, and it cured me. So, end of story.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the first second you walk into one of these ex-gay ministries, they call you an ex-gay, whether you've changed or not. But you tell them, you say, wait a second, I'm still gay. They go, well, of course you are, because you won't say you're not gay. So they have you say that you're heterosexual, even if you don't feel that way, because if you keep repeating it, they tell you God will reward you for that faith and make you the straight person you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really name and claim it theology. And so anytime you express doubt about changing, they say, well, just because you don't have enough faith. It's about blaming the person involved. And that's why it's very destructive. That's why these ministries and these therapies are rejected by every respected medical and mental health organization in the world. The APA, the AMA, they all say this doesn't work and causes anxiety, depression, and self-destructive behavior. And it's backed by the very fact that every founder of every ex-gay ministry has either been caught in a scandal, such as being at a gay bar, or rejects these ministries today and say they don't work.
Really? Well, I was going to ask, but you kind of answered it already. I was going to say if these people are just kind of off on a loopy idea, so what? I mean, you've written a 300-page engaging book. So what? But you say that it leads to a lot of personal misery.
It leads to people wanting to commit suicide. It leads to people trying to be who they're not and becoming very depressed. And then they become even more depressed because they keep promising God will change, and when they fail, they feel like they've let down God.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that do to a person who believes they're going to go to hell unless they don't change? It creates a person who is shattered as a human being, a spirit that is crushed. It really creates a living hell on earth. You know, some people believe that they're going to go to hell. So they say, in order to go to heaven, I'm going to live a life of hell on earth by trying to be who I'm not. It's like an actor playing a role. People can convince themselves that the lines they read are true for a while, but eventually, like any play, the final curtain comes crashing down at the end, and the actor has to take off the mask and be themselves again. And that's what we see with these groups. At the very end, that curtain comes crashing down, and all these leaders who said they have changed have to take off that mask and say, you know what, I really was gay all along. And in fact, we've seen, again, leader after leader, even right now in the Detroit area, there's an ex-gay leader who has been at more tubs than Mr. Clean, meaning bathhouses. You know, and we really want to offer this individual a golden opportunity. In fact, we've showered him with many golden opportunities to come out and say, in fact, that he is not the ex-gay he has proclaimed to be in the media. And I think it would be a very healing opportunity and a choice this person should make before they end up as the next scandal, like John Polk or Michael Johnston.
Well, tell us those stories about John Polk and Michael Johnston. I actually don't know the stories.
John Polk was the undisputed leader of the ex-gay ministries. He was on the cover of Newsweek with his so-called ex-lesbian wife, Anne. He was on Good Morning America, Oprah, and 60 Minutes, and he said, I can change. I'm living proof that one can go from homosexual to heterosexual. Well, I was sitting in my dining room one night trying to figure out what the first chapter was going to be for my book, Anything But Straight, and I get a call from my colleague from HRC who's in this bar, and he says, Wayne, get over to the bar right now. The leader of the ex-gay ministries, John Polk, is hitting on me and trying to buy me cocktails. And I ran down there as fast as I could, and then I took my camera, and I couldn't believe it. I got into the bar, and there he was, John Polk, the most famous ex-gay. The ex-gay spokesperson for all these white right-wing groups was in there holding a cocktail, having a gay old time. And I saw him, and he freaked out, and I took his picture, and he was kicked out of the ministries for a while because of this. And he worked for Focus on the Family and Exodus International. And it's just the latest in a series of scandals. Look, the very co-founders of the world's largest ex-gay ministry,
mm-hmm.
who used to travel all around the country saying they've changed, admitted to each other on a plane ride to Indianapolis that they actually loved each other and divorced their wives and had a commitment ceremony, another success for the ex-gay ministries. The founder of Homosexuals Anonymous, sort of a 12-step program
yeah.
to cure people, this guy used to have phone sex with the people he was trying to help and gave them nude massages. He would tell them, I'm only giving you a nude massage to try to desensitize you to the powers of the flesh. It's yeah. like a bad pickup line at the bar at 3 a.m.
Well, am I mistaking this, Wayne Bessent, or is there a bit of relish on your part in all of this? I mean, because I think at the core of your book, Anything But Straight, there's an understanding of the importance of this issue, but still
I enjoy every time we bust an ex-gay leader, and I've brought down two of the top three, and I'll tell you about Michael Johnston in a minute, because that's horrifying. But I do enjoy it, not because I want to hurt the individual involved, but because every time we bring one of these people down, those who are suffering from these lies that are put forth by Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson can see the truth and help escape these horrible ministries, this ex-gay trap. And I get letters all the time from people through the work I've done who have escaped and are leading happy, fulfilling lives. You see these ministries tell people. They scare them. They say if you come out of the closet as openly gay, you're going to die of AIDS. They say if you come out of the closet, you're going to die alone and be miserable and unhappy. Gay life is terrible, they tell them. And if, of course, you don't know anyone is openly gay, you're likely to believe these people. So when I help these folks come out and they have that life partner and they have that long-term happiness that they were told could never happen, and they thank me for it, I really do enjoy it. So, yeah, I hope we can get as many leaders as possible to either come out or be caught in a scandal, such as the one in Detroit who is making a mockery of both the ministries and, I think, God, quite frankly.
I wonder if he's listening.
I would hope he would be.
Wayne Besson, let me ask you this. You mentioned sort of the process of going to these ex-gay ministries. Have you been to one sort of undercover?
I've been to
or
many.
Or openly?
I have been both openly ex-gay, I'm just kidding, at these ministries, and undercover as well.
Yeah.
And some of the stuff that goes on there is so bizarre.
Like what?
Well, they make you wear a rubber band. And they tell you, whenever you see somebody who you're attracted to, snap the rubber band, it'll snap you out of
couldn't it have
the
opposite,
spell.
Couldn't it have the opposite effect, though, too?
Well, it just gives you a big red wrist and lets the people know that you're attracted to them, I guess. Another thing is they try to have touch football games for gay men to butch them up.
Really?
And lipstick seminars for lesbians.
Aren't there lipstick lesbians?
But that's exactly right. It creates lipstick lesbians and gay men who know the difference between a first down and a touchdown, but they're still gay. Another thing they do is called intrauterine memory recovery.
Whoa. Wait. Run that by us slowly.
Intrauterine memory recovery.
Okay.
You see, they try to find out how you became gay. They say, you know, something happened while you were in your mother's womb. She was having a bad time. But if we hypnotize you and you can have a flashback, you can remember what happened in your mother's womb, therefore you know how you became gay.
Mm-hmm.
It's these kind of weird, bizarre techniques. Here's my favorite. One of the leading reparative therapists, Dr. Nicholas, he says that in order to become straight, you should drink Gatorade as a guy and call other men dude, because that's supposed to make you macho. Hey, dude, yeah, I'm feeling straight already. It's a circus act. Another one of the theories is even straight men can turn gay if they suffer failure or defeat. They will start having gay fantasies. And, of course, my team, the Washington Wizards, back home, the basketball team, has had many losing years. And I figured I locked in the locker room and wondered if any of them were gay, and they weren't. So I don't know about that theory. If anybody should be gay from that theory, it's my Wizards.
Right. And Detroit Lions have won a couple in a row. Hey,
they're butch. They're becoming heterosexual for
there
those
you go.
Victories.
With these ministries, I mean, I can't imagine that they have great numbers of gay men or lesbian women attracted to them. So, I mean, what's the kind of the structure of it? We were talking about these seem to be generated by the far-right Christian movement.
It's a sham and a front. A lot of people enter the doors of these ministries, but they leave right after that. It's sort of like a turnstile at a Rolling Stones concert. One after the other, they come and go.
Mm-hmm.
But very few people stay for a long period of time because they realize it's a sham. Now, the religious right makes it seem like they're much bigger than they are because they take out million-dollar advertising campaigns. They put $100,000 ads in USA Today. But if you look at the ministries themselves, the right wing doesn't give any money to the actual ministries. It's all sizzle, but they don't care about the steak. Because even Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and James Dobson know these ministries don't work. But it serves their political agenda, so they'll buy expensive ads. Now, the problem here is that people who really believe they're going to hell can stay to these things up to 10, 15 years. So there is a core group of people who are having their lives destroyed. And it's one of my missions with my book, Anything But Straight, and with my work when I was with the Human Rights Campaign, to help these people, help bring them out of the closet and live the rich, fulfilling lives that I know they can lead.
Mm-hmm. The book, Anything But Straight, also has a corresponding website, anythingbutstraight.com. Subtitle is Unmasking the Scandals and Lies Behind the Ex-Gay Myth. My in-studio guest is Wayne Besson, the author, who's been on a multi-city tour. And is it... I'm trying to frame this question in a way that is deeper than it sounds. I was going to say, how are you received? In other words, you're countering a very destructive myth in the gay community. So is that well appreciated? Is this book and your authorship and the work in this a help to people that have made the courageous step in some areas of coming out?
It's been well received everywhere I've been. I've been getting good crowds everywhere. It's been very exciting, and also mm-hmm. the religious right hates it. It excites me because this costs them a lot of money. My book hurts them financially because they make a lot of money by exploiting gay people through these so-called ex-gay ministries. In fact, when I found and photographed John Polk at the gay bar that evening, Focus on the Family for the first time lost money in recent memory.
You were going to tell the story about the other guy, Michael Johnston.
Yeah, I was just about to talk about Michael Johnston, who was the star of the religious rights television campaign. He said he had found Jesus and escaped homosexuality through the power of Jesus. And he was on this TV campaign they had that went all over the country. He was also part of their print advertising campaign, a real ugly ad that, with a headline, From Innocence to AIDS, meaning he had contracted HIV. Hmm. I had gotten a tip from somebody in Virginia Beach that said Mr. Johnston, the ex-gay spokesperson who also worked for D. James Kennedy from Coral Ridge Ministries and Jerry Falwell, this ex-gay leader was having unsafe sex with many men in Virginia Beach. I went down on these tips to Virginia Beach to investigate, and in August, I found, unfortunately, that these rumors were true. I have a videotape, in fact, of him having an orgy. And
wait a minute, how do you get
it? He didn't look very ex-gay. And
well, how do you get a videotape?
I can't disclose that.
All right.
But it exists, and I have it, and it's quite illuminating, considering this was Jerry Falwell's prime example of how you can change. And I talked to one young man that Michael Johnston, the ex-gay leader, slept with,
mm-hmm.
who lied to this guy about his HIV status.
Mm.
And this guy told me, Michael Johnston ruined my life.
You know, actually, dumb old me, I'm kind of getting the implications of this. If you're HIV positive and you're having unprotected sex, you are you're good
a
chance.
A felon in Virginia.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is in your book, Anything But Straight?
No, this came right after we published. I will update it with this. This is the latest scandal. Michael Johnston at a Virginia Beach, who was, instead of being honest, though, Jerry Falwell and D. James Kennedy and the American Family Association, all these groups, you know what they did? They shuffled him off to a sex addiction facility in Kentucky.
Hmm.
Didn't tell anybody. Did not make this public about his disaster until I found out about it. And
so
then they had to send press releases out about this. But, you know, it's funny how they say they're so moral and so self-righteous, but they didn't care about the public health. They didn't care about people. They didn't care about setting the record straight, which is the only thing they can set straight. And they still couldn't get that straight.
And so if he comes and sues us, you've got the evidence.
Oh, yeah, we've got more than enough evidence. We've got witnesses, we've got a tape, and they've already admitted that the religious right has sent out press releases, and this has been on the news before.
Now, Wayne Besson, the religious right, as I said at the beginning, with William Burroughs' quote about having no business of their own, they get into everybody else's business, so they're always psychoanalyzing you and other members of our gay community. And any sense of them? I mean, one of the things that always occurs to me is that anyone who is so taken up with the sexuality of other people, what does that tell us? What does that tell us about their fascination with their concern or whatever they have for 12 or 13% of our country?
I think anybody who's obsessed with what gay people are doing probably want to enter that arena themselves. I mean, why else would some supposedly straight guy go around spending his time going, following people around in gay bars? We got a guy, Peter LaBarbera, who worked for the Family Research Council on Concerned Women, who likes to go in leather and take pictures of naughty behavior in certain gay bars. And it's okay, I could see him going once. But when you keep going back, I mean, come on now. There's a reason. It's very bizarre. And they can't figure these people out. But I've always thought that they can't take temptation. And the way a lot of these people want to stamp out their own temptation is by passing repressive laws that would really take away any of their own fascination with any given topic, whether it's a nude beach or gay rights.
Well, Donna Redwing, who's a gay activist, says the book Anything But Straight, Unmasking the Scandals and Lies Behind the Ex-Gay Myth, she says, sheds light on one of the most insidious movements of the radical right. My guest has been Wayne Besson. The book is Anything But Straight, Unmasking the Scandals and Lies Behind the Ex-Gay Myth. You can go to anythingbutstraight.com. Also, a link will be on my page as well, my website. It's published by Harrington Park Press. Wayne, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. I appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for checking out WRIF.com. While you're here, don't forget to join the Riff Cyber Group. Get your ticket to a totally unfair internet advantage for the Riff on-air giveaways. Plus, you can win stuff that we don't even give away on the air. Awesome internet exclusives from WRIF.com and much more.
Oh, that sounds great.
Make sure you sign up with the Riff Cyber Crew today. Just click over to the Cyber Crew page while you're listening.
Any questions?
And thanks again for listening.
It's a dream.
It's a miracle.
It's great for women, too. To WRIF.com.
More Riff Rock is coming right up.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Amigos and Taylor in Woodhaven.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Buddy's Pizza, recognized as one of the nation's five best pizza places by the Food Network.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com. You're logged on at WRIF.com. We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We talked with rock and roll tennis pro Luke Jensen. It wasn't long before we all start talking about his brother Murphy.
What's up with your brother? Just because he knocks up Robin Givens doesn't know it means.
Blow, man.
That was actually a cheap shot, and I'll apologize for it. Murphy did impregnate Robin Givens. That is true. Luke's
beautiful baby boy, 3 years old.
And is she now your sister-in-law?
She is. No, they are not married.
Are they together?
No, they're not together.
Ooh. Oh. Yeah. Was it even close?
No. Not even close.
Drew.
That sounds good.
And Mike.
Hey.
In the morning.
Each of us has to set his own standards, I guess.
On the Riff.
That's Riff.
101 WRIF.
Ow, you're shouting at me.
Riff. Every Tuesday, 101 WRIF,
the home of rock and roll,
brings you Tuber Tuesday. Keep it locked on the Riff all day this Tuesday for back-to-back badass blasts of your favorite Riff rock bands.
Plus, the Riff gives you the hottest tickets to the coolest concerts and events happening around the Motor City.
Who's your
boy? Tuber Tuesday.
Double the Riff rock.
Double the Riff prizes.
Learn it. Know it. Live it.
Tuber Tuesday on the Riff for 101 WRIF.
If it rocks.
If it really rocks.
Well, again, transmission.
Here comes the music.
It's on the Riff.
We'll get back to more Riff Rock in just a moment. This is 101 WRIF, broadcasting worldwide at WRIF.com. Thanks for listening.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Antonio's Cucina Italiana, with three locations in Farmington.
Farmington Hills, Dearborn Heights, and Dearborn.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Dr. Roche, put your best pace and body forward with help from Dr. Roche.
Log on today and save
with the home of rock and roll
at WRIF.com.
Hello, how are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
I think by God Bush can't finish his job. He was aimed to take care of his dad's problems. Didn't finish that in 91. And he damn sure ain't got this sumbitch finished now.
No, no, it's going to take a long time.
I mean, you know what I'd do, hell. I'd split that son of a bitch wide open.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'd use them bomb planes and bombs, and I'd have everybody scared to look up.
But you know, the thing of it is, after all is said and done, we still don't have Saddam Hussein. Can you believe it?
I don't know they're supposed to have his sons, but...
Oh, duh, you don't think they got his sons necessarily?
Who knows whether it's his sons?
Parent of high school students, or are going to be, or anything like that, or you're a college student that owes on your college tuition. Listen to this. They are going to, and this is just across the wire, I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad tidings, that from now on, high school is not going to be free. They're going to charge tuition. They're going to charge thousands of that. No, I'm making that up. But if all of a sudden high school became the you know, you were asked to pay in the same manner that college is, people would be horrified. We take it for granted that grades kindergarten through 12 are free, and then once you graduate high school, it's on to paying the big bucks. And there's not much on the political landscape that challenges this state of affairs that has been with us for a long time, but there is a movement to change this. And joining us is Professor Adolph Reed Jr. He's a professor of political science at the New School University in New York City, and he's also the national co-chair of the campaign for a free higher education from the Labor Party. And we'll talk about the Labor Party as well as Professor Reed's appearance here in Detroit coming right up. Adolph Reed, welcome to the Peter Werbe Show.
Oh, hi, Peter. Thanks for having me. I'm very happy to be on.
Yeah, people would be shocked if all of a sudden we started saying we were going to charge tuition for high school, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they certainly would be, and it's a good example because you know, people forget that universal free high school education hasn't been around that long either. I mean, that it really didn't get consolidated in the U.S. until the 1930s.
Really? No. I was going to ask you a little of the history. Maybe we could even start with that. I assumed that was happening since like the 1830s.
Well, that's what people, that's what you might think. I mean, but in fact. The idea of a universal right, even to what we now consider elementary education, didn't really get fully consolidated in the U.S. until pretty late in the 19th century, and we won that basically as a product of a century-long struggle led pretty much by the early labor movement and by other kind of progressive reformers in the 19th century. In fact, one of the little quirks of history was that most states in the South didn't offer free public elementary education until after the Civil War, and it was the Reconstruction governments that pushed it through. And then after Reconstruction was defeated, a lot of the Southern states tried to undo, universal free elementary education. But the struggle for universal access to free secondary education. It was also the product of a comparable struggle and agitation and advocacy, and it wasn't until around World War II that it came to be understood that was part of the basic
sort of a right, almost
social right or entitlement. Yeah.
Well, what was the situation before, like in the 1920s? I mean, I know here in Detroit, certainly, my parents, my grandparents, they all went to free public education in the city of Detroit.
Right. Yeah. Well, there were some cities around that had it, I think they began to offer it more after World War One. As a rule, there'd be like a couple of high schools in a city, maybe, in a city of some size, and often enough, people had to pay some tuition to go to them.
Mm-hmm. Now, the situation with universities, that's had kind of had a mixed history, because I know there certainly have been school systems at the college level that have been free. Most famous one, probably the City College of New York.
Right. Yep, exactly. And it was free to all residents of the city of New York from the time they opened in, you know, until the 1970s, until around the fiscal crisis in the mid-1970s. The University of California system was very, very close to free as well. It was quite cheap. Only nominal fees until the last 15 or 20 years. And there were other state systems around that were practically free or close to free. I mean, I went to college at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, and once I became a state resident, my tuition was $134 a semester.
Hmm.
And this was like in the late 1960s. Well, of course, $134 was a lot more than it is now, but still, and I mean, that's, you know, I mean, in most states, the state university systems were chartered, and especially land-grant colleges, with a mission of providing low-cost access to higher education to residents of the state.
Well, that's long gone, though.
Yeah, totally.
In fact, when I hear what, I don't know if I didn't graduate from a school, whether it is considered my alma mater, but Michigan State, Michigan State University, I mean, the tuitions that I hear, I'm just flabbergasted that anyone other than the upper middle class and above could afford that. I mean, who's going to college these days? Can middle class and working class families even afford it anymore?
It's becoming increasingly difficult. The Lumina Foundation for Education did a study about a year and a half ago that found that in 46 states, I think, tuition and fees basically price attendance at the four-year universities out of the reach of most working class students and so-called lower middle class students. And in 12 or 13 states, I think even the community colleges were almost out of reach for most working class students. And that was based on data compiled before the serious state budget crunches that hit after September 11, 2001.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw yesterday University of Illinois has announced a 16% tuition increase across the board.
Sure, that's one of the ways they're dealing with the budget crunches, cutting social spending, raising cost to residents.
Exactly. And in some states, in fact, in many states, from what I've heard anecdotally, state university systems are shifting admissions priorities toward out-of-state students who pay more in the way of tuition,
mm-hmm.
and away from in-state students. So, that's almost like a play on the mindset of NAFTA and reactionary globalization as we approach Miami.
Mm.
And at the same time, there's an article in the papers about a week or so ago you may have seen indicating that, there are two articles. One of them indicating that the endowments of well-off private colleges and universities have done very well over the last two or three years. So the rich are getting richer. And an article a few days ago indicating that those universities get the lion's share of all federal financial aid to students. So I think we're getting a pretty ugly picture here.
Sure.
That increasingly access to a college education is becoming the province of the very well-off. The data on debt loads are extraordinary. I mean, the average student now graduates from a four-year college with at least $17,000 in debt. And that has all kinds of ramifications. I mean, in a soft job market, what does it mean like to start life in a hole like that? I mean, how can you pay off these debts on a Starbucks job or whatever?
Well, one of course, the philosophy, as you said, rooted in the reform movements and the labor movement of the 19th century and into the 20th century, was to level the playing field as to stop this sharply graduated hierarchy of incomes and to provide an education to people to the extent that people could compete from all classes. This seems to drive us in the other direction.
That's exactly what it does, and in fact, you can go back to the early 1970s and see evidence of what were then the infant of right wing think tanks arguing precisely this, that they needed to cut back in access to liberal arts education and higher education generally for working class students, basically, partly because they were concerned about feeding what they call the adversary culture of people in colleges who tend to be more opposed to their to their political agendas, and the other was concern that there'd be an overeducated population that would make too much in the way of demands about employment, right? Mm. And the rights and entitlements. And it wasn't long after that we began to see that the increase in the costs of higher education, tuition and fees, began to go up much more sharply than increases in federal grants and aid, mainly the Pell Grant, which is the main federal grant and aid program that gives tuition and other support to poorer students, those sources of aid, both from the federal government and from states, increasingly fell behind the rates of increase from the late 1970s forward, and that's a position that we wind up in now, and it's really. We think that it's just time to say, okay, look, because at the same time that this is going on, of course, the irony is that the economists and pundits keep saying that, having a college education or at least a college credential is increasingly going to be a basic necessity for having any chance at a decent job or anything that looks like job security in this country.
Yeah, except it's getting priced out of the reach of everybody except for maybe the top 15 or 20% of the population.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hey, let me reintroduce you. This is the Peter Werby Show that you're listening to. My guest is Professor Adolph Reed, Jr. And Professor Reed is the author of so many books, too numerous to mention. And we're fortunate to have Professor Reed in Detroit on Thursday, November 20th and Friday, November 21st. The November 21st date is sponsored by the Labor Party, and this is it's going to be about exactly what we're talking about, free higher education. And tell us about your Thursday speaking engagement as well, if you would.
Oh, sure. The Thursday engagement is sponsored by the African American Studies Department at Wayne State, and it's this is the centennial of the publication of W.E.B. Du Bois's classic book, The Souls of Black Folk, and my lecture there, which is at noon on Thursday, is on the political significance of The Souls of Black Folk then and now. And I like going to Detroit. I mean, one of the things that I've missed since I moved back to the East Coast from Chicago in 98 was that I don't spend as much time in Detroit as I used to, back then. So I'm looking forward to visiting again. I want to say, that this problem, and I'm sure it's something that most of your listeners are aware of, but that this problem with choking off access, to higher ed by virtue of increase in cost has other ramifications. I mean, one of them is people often think that it's just that the problem is only a problem of trying to think about how to pay for the education of your kids. Well, more and more workers, more and more adult working people themselves are going back to college either to pursue career objectives or because they just want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we think that part of the demand for universal elementary school education in the 19th century was connected to skill and personal upgrading, but a lot of it was just that people should have the right to enrich themselves and should have the opportunity to enrich themselves. As the slogan from the early 20th century put it, we want bread, but we want roses too. And that's coupled, and that's what the Labor Party program is all about. Our program in its entirety takes both those objectives into account. But this campaign in particular is one that we think just boils down to this, basically, that access to pursuit of higher education should be available to everybody in the society who desires it and who can satisfy appropriate admissions requirements at whatever institutions they want to apply to, for as far as their interest and ability will take them without constraint by cost.
Well, let me do this, though. You probably modestly neglected to mention your talk on Friday, November 21st, that is going to, in fact, talk about free higher education. It's going to be at Wayne State University again in the Student Center on Gullen Mall, and it's at 6 p.m. with Professor Adolph Reed. The idea that we could all enter college based on our abilities is pretty attractive. It would seem to me that in a country that just has okayed $400 billion for the War Department and is stuck mired in South Asia and in the Middle East, and a huge tax break has just been given to Bush's rich buddies, doesn't appear that there would be any money left over for free higher education. We're going to be lucky there's going to be money left over for Social Security.
Well, I'll tell you what, Peter. I mean, the thing about this program is that it is laughably cheap. I mean, it's stunningly cheap. It's amazing. The total cost of all tuition and fees paid by full-time and part-time students in public 2 and 4 year colleges now is about $27 billion a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's 83% of everybody who's enrolled, right, are in public institutions.
Well, it does sound like a chunk of money, though.
Well, it's like a week of the war on Iraq.
Wait. You said $27
billion? Yeah.
I mean, I think we're only paying that's about a month in Iraq.
Yeah, I'm sorry, it's a month of the war in Iraq.
Yeah,
right.
Well, we could take our choice.
Yes, that's right.
I guess I would go for the free higher education.
And I'll tell you what else. I mean, Robert McIntyre with Citizens for Tax Justice about a year and a half ago calculated the cost to the federal budget of just those corporate tax loopholes that were opened between 1990 and July of 2000. So we're not even talking about the damages Bush has been able to inflict. And he argued that if you close those alone, right, leave unmolested all the corporate tax loopholes that predated those, that act by itself would restore $60 billion a year to the federal treasury.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are lots of ways that we could raise this $27 billion a year without causing any, sweat to the deficit or without even thinking about increasing taxes on working people.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, this, I always intuit a listener reaction. They're going, oh, it's one of these tax and spend. Well, these.
Sure.
So you're talking about no tax increase. Actually, and what I always pose to people on these broadcasts is that we can take our choice. We can give tax breaks to the ultra wealthy. We can fight wars all across the world that are unnecessary and illegal under international law.
Right.
Or we can reward ourselves, the people of the United States, with free tuition, with medical, universal health care and what have you.
Yep.
But is there any political will existing among, certainly not the Republicans, but even, what's the name of that other party? It's the Democrats. They used to be active during the 20th century. I remember them.
Yeah, I can recall them faintly. It's been a long time since I've seen one. Although I will say this, I'm on the board of Public Citizen, where I've served now with David Bonnier.
My pal.
Yeah, who's a great guy, and he's one of the last of them, I guess.
Who was the House Whip, right?
Right. Yeah, that's right.
From Mount Clemens, or in that area.
Yeah. I know a lot of Macomb County was in his district.
Right.
I guess he's not on the faculty at Wayne State now, too.
He is.
But you're absolutely right, and it seems like it should be a pretty simple choice for us to make. You know, one other thing to say about this, too, is that it's not even a new idea, right? I mean, it's not even something that we thought up, because there's a clear precedent for what we're talking about in living American history, and that's the post-World War II GI Bill of Rights, which did exactly this. It paid tuition and fees and paid a living stipend that was equivalent to two-thirds the average industrial wage to returning GIs who went to college. And, in fact, it sort of paid them $20 a week, which is that two-thirds of the weekly industrial wage for a year, if they did nothing even. But if they went to college, it paid their tuition fees and paid the cost of living stipend for the entire time that they were in school. And the record of that program as a success. I mean, you talk about investment, right? I mean, this is like sort of classic trickle-up investment that actually works in contrast to the trickle-down stuff that that the Bush tax cuts are supposed to do. 8 million people took advantage of the education component of the post-war GI Bill. A Joint Economic Committee study and audit of selected federal programs found, done in the late 80s, found that the GI Bill was one of the most successful programs ever. And their calculation was that every dollar invested in the education component of the GI Bill produced $6.96 in tax revenue from the increased earnings of people who took advantage of the program.
Wait, let me just here. Let me. I was thinking. I'm completely on board with this, but I thought of an objection that people might have. As I said, I'm all for this. And say, I mean, I have no idea how many people are enrolled in colleges now. Just let's say 15 million.
Okay.
Suddenly, you have free universal college tuition, and someone like myself who investigated taking a desktop publishing class. And so it was like $280, and I decided, I don't need to know it that badly. I go, oh, hey. So suddenly, instead of $15 million, you might understandably, and maybe even welcome, you might have 35 million people. Well, then suddenly there's not room for people in classes. I guess we could either have a military industrial complex or a prison industrial complex, or we could have an education industrial complex.
That's exactly correct. And, I mean, that's another lesson that we can learn from the GI Bill, because that's exactly what happened. The fact that all these guys came back and went to college meant, among other things, that new campuses were open. I mean, most of the urban universities, places like Wayne State, although I'm not sure of Wayne State's provenance off the top of my head, but most of those most of the urban universities were opened in the post-war period. Downstate branch campuses of the main state universities were by and large opened in the post-war period just to accommodate this increased demand. And what that meant, among other things, was that areas of the country that didn't have access, that didn't have university or college education, nearby with the many things that colleges bring with them, like FM radio stations that play jazz, or enrichment courses, or places to hold forums and do other important community service stuff, got them as a result of the pressure to expand. That itself was a result of this increased demand. It fuels a construction boom. It creates new jobs, both for faculty and staff, and it's not just because I'm a professor that I think that investing in faculty and staff in the long run is more socially useful than investing in the expansion of prison guards, right? So I think it's something like a multiplier effect there. But I mean, even if in the short term, so that this social investment actually creates wealth and value and income, but even if in the short term, right, there'd be an enrollment squeeze or a push that would double current enrollments and thus possibly double the total cost. If the cost of providing free public higher education rose to $60 billion in 5 years, that's still just a little more than 2% of the annual federal budget. I mean, that's a sum that can be absorbed easily, right? By closing some of these corporate tax loopholes, by taking back some of the tax cut for the richest 0.5% of people in the country. Right? It doesn't do anything for the rest of us except go in our pockets. And you asked earlier about the political will. Well, one interesting thing is that during the, already in the presidential debates, the discussions, I think Edwards from North Carolina started out by proposing, I think a year or 2 years, and maybe he's talking about 4 years now, free college education in exchange for a commitment to doing some kind of community service.
Mm-hmm.
Gephardt has been calling for expanding the Pell Grant program, which I mentioned earlier was the principal source of actual grants, federal grants in aid for tuition support as opposed to loans. One or two of the others have been calling for expanding the Pell Grant program, offering more in the way of aid, kind of incrementally. I think Kucinich is the only one who has actually adopted something that sounds like our program. So, I mean, there's talk about it from the Democrats, of course. Our history with them is that they will, at this stage of the game,
promise anything.
You're right. And then as soon as they get the nomination, move to the so-called center, which means, that they'll hear more of the sweet music of the investment bankers, and they'll leave us out in the lurch.
Well, Adolf Reed, we're going to actually have to leave it at that. We're out of time. If you want to hear more on this push by the Labor Party for free higher education, Professor Adolf Reed, Jr. will be talking about it Friday, November 21st, 6 p.m. at Wayne State University in the Student Center off of Gullen Mall. And is there a website that you can direct people to?
Yes, I was just going to ask to give it. It's www.freehighered, all one word, .org. www.freehighered.org.
Well, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Hey, thanks for checking out WRIF.com. While you're here, don't forget to join the Riff Cyber Crew. It's your ticket to a totally unfair internet advantage for the Riff on-air giveaways.
Plus, you can win stuff that we don't even give away on the air.
Awesome internet exclusives from WRIF.com and much more.
Oh, that sounds great.
Make sure you sign up with the Riff Cyber Crew today.
Just click over to the Cyber Crew page while you're listening.
Any questions?
And thanks again for listening.
It's a dream. It's a miracle.
It's great for women, too.
To WRIF.com.
More Riff Rock is coming right up.
The Motor City's best rock station, 101 WRIF, and the best radio website in the world, WRIF.com, brings the hottest deals in the Motor City. Now, WRIF.com makes your night on the town even better without hitting your wallet with Dine Online. You are now one click away from dining at some of your favorite restaurants for only half price.
Dine online and eat for less with WRIF.com.
Save a ton of money with some of Metro Detroit's premier restaurants, like Carrera's Cucina Italiana Restaurant on Telegraph Road in Dearborn Heights.
You can purchase full-price gift certificates to area restaurants for only half price.
But quantities are limited, so hurry and order your half-price certificates now.
Dine online.
It's all from the station that delivers you more.
101 The Riff.
101 WRIF gives you the best deals in Detroit at WRIF.com. Check out special offers and savings from Motor City businesses.
Like Dr. Roche. Put your best pace and body forward with help from Dr. Roche.
Log on today and save.
With the home of rock and roll.
At WRIF.com.
Hello. How are you?
What you missed from Drew and Mike in the morning.
We were looking at that new Girls Gone Wild video, and a few observations were made.
The producer is hilarious. You hear in this one more than what I'm used to. You hear the producer's voice on, hey, let's see your ass. Yeah, turn. Oh, man, is that hot.
Yeah.
They encourage him like the creepiest porno guy.
Yeah.
And then if they show their ass, which they usually do, he goes, yeah, let's see the kitty cat.
Oh, is that right?
Yep.
You're taking a line from Ike?